You're live.
Good morning. Welcome to our December 18th meeting. It's the last meeting of the year. If I could have one of Santa's elves or helpers close the back door, please, as people come in. It gets a little hard to hear sometimes with people out in the hallway. Would you all please rise and join me in the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Always amazed sometimes in the morning. It looks like it's about a 3-to-1 ratio of people sitting in this room. So if we're a ship, I think we're going to be a little bit listening today. So please spread out and enjoy yourself. Those in the back of the room, as they say on Thursday nights, come on down. Madam Clerk, would you read the changes, please?
You have several changes to today's agenda. Under the consent agenda, item B3, request to appoint Jeff Hamm, County Health Agency Director to the San Luis Obispo County Employees Pension Trust Board. Recommend approval. Staff is requesting that this item be withdrawn pending further research on the appointment requirements. Consent agenda added item is B34. The following map has been received and has satisfied all conditions of approval that were established in the public hearing on its tentative track, on its tentative map, excuse me. A CO070021, a proposed subdivision resulting in two lots by Troche Properties and Investments LLC, Guayama Lane and Napomo 4th District. Recommend approval. All requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement. Another withdrawn item on the consent agenda, item B18N. This is file number AGP 2006-00026, Jerry and Patricia Bello. This is for a contract for an ag preserve. Staff is requesting this item be withdrawn because the contracts have not been signed. That's your changes for today.
Okay, move on to the presentation calendar. There's a motion. Moved by Supervisor Sajjan, seconded by Supervisor Ovett. Madam Clerk, a roll call, please.
Mr. Sajjan?
Aye.
Mr. Ovett?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye. First on our presentation calendar is, like we said before, some of our longtime employees. I'm going to take the chair's prerogative to read this person because not only has she been a good friend for 30 years, but it's really been a pleasure to work with her the last 3 years. So, Tony, where are you? I lost sight of you.
She's out there.
There she is over here. I thought you were going to sit over there. You have to stand up when we read this, and hey, and you've got to come up there. And it's just not negotiable. It's your turn in the barrel. We do a lot of these, and I just want to share with you that it is a personal loss. It's a bittersweet moment for me. Tony has not only been a good friend for 30 years, but like I said, it's been a real privilege to work with you the last 3 years. And like you say, I don't want to send you off in tears, but I'm not real happy that you and people like you that are good friends are leaving because it's going to be a tremendous void to fill. So I'm going to read this, and then we're going to move on, and I hope it's going to be a lighthearted moment, and maybe some people in the audience are going to come up and tell a story or two. And then Tony's going to have the last word, and I hope her stories aren't too embarrassing.
I think I've already told them all.
This resolution is formally hereby offered in red. Whereas Tony Prentice began her employment with the County of San Luis Obispo on May 16, 1977, as a mail clerk. And that's M-A-I-L, for those of you who are listening. Whereas, Tony was promoted to intermediate typist in January of 81, senior typist in January of 95, and supervising administrative clerk in June of 2001. Whereas, Tony has been employed by the Department of General Services from its inception, including 15 years as the department receptionist and literally the voice of General Services. Whereas, Tony has aged to perfection and become a county legend. And I think I can say that. I hope I can.
You can.
Whereas Tony is retiring after serving the people of San Luis Obispo County for 30 years and is now taking the well-deserved time to enjoy life with her husband, Pete, and it's fitting that the Board of Supervisors recognize her for her many years of dedication. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors does hereby commend Tony Prentice for her 30 years of exemplary service to the people of San Luis Obispo County, and it's wished the best of health, happiness, and many new adventures in the years to come. And, Tony, if I could, I'd go down and give you a hug, but I'm going to get one later.
Okay.
With that, let's give it up.
Yeah, I know. I told you.
Tony, you get a camera? Do we have a... Come on with a camera that's going to come forward and take a picture of... Okay, we'll wait for the camera. And in the meantime, I think we will continue the celebration and celebrity roast.
Oh, good. I'll just stand right here then.
And then we'll hold your certificate till we can give it to you after we find a camera somewhere.
You call it somebody. He's getting up.
Oh. Our first speaker to participate in the continuance of our celebration of Tony's achievements, George Rosenberger.
Yes, Chairman Linth, all members of the board, George Rosenberger, General Services. Couple of people I know Tony would want me to introduce that are here in the crowd today. Tony's husband, Pete. And Tony's mother, Betty Zeck. For all of you that know, Betty's also a county employee, one of our stars out at the airport. And Betty, you can't start crying already.
Yeah, Mom.
Sorry, Betty, crying's not allowed till after 10 o'clock.
Well, in addition to all the attributes mentioned in your board's resolution, and of course in keeping with Tony's notorious talents for office decorations and other party planning, Tony is one of those few special people that you meet during your career. Tony always managed to bring a smile to your face and a laugh during your conversations. She has touched many in her career with the county. Just talk to the RSVP volunteers who interface with Tony on a daily basis and provide information to the public, or ask the central mail employees who she supervises, or for that matter, ask anyone who has had some time with Tony. General Services has shared Tony with our fellow county employees as Tony has shared herself with all of us. We are all a little better off for knowing Tony. So Tony, thanks for the last 30 years. Our best to you in your retirement, and don't forget to come back and continue to share with us.
I'm going to call you.
Klasha, did you want to go next? Next, Klasha Derenar, airport extraordinaire executive, is going to...
Tony, this is for you.
All right.
Oh, yay!
I thought it was a landing light.
Well, we finally got the Malzers back up, so... Dearest Tony, a lot has been said these last several weeks. We've all reminisced and recalled past days, and exploits, too. But I have to say, you were the captain of fun. That's a tribute, because in our workaday life, fun is very important. You made sure we stopped and observed the holidays, the birthdays, anniversaries, dates important to us, but we certainly would not have given them the attention they deserved without you. You've been a great friend, and we share many things in common. We share birth dates. How often have we lamented that on January 4th, everyone is through celebrating, so nobody wants to go out and party on our day. And those combined Christmas birthday gifts, aren't they a pain? I'm pretty tired of that routine, too. And wedding anniversaries, you and Pete on April the 10th, Kenny and I on April 11th. There's one thing I didn't write down here, but you shared something else with us. Kenny had cancer in 2000 and beat it, and shortly thereafter, you had cancer, and you beat it. So that's another thing that we share in common. But the one thing for which I really thank you, Tony, is without you, we wouldn't have Airport Betty.
That's right.
Now, that might sound a little backwards, since Betty's your mom, and without her, you certainly wouldn't be here either. But thanks to you for sending her to us. She's been with the airport for more than 11 years now, and we hope she sticks around for a while. Here's to Tony and to Pete, too. We will miss you and all the things that make coming to work a lot more fun. Thank you.
Next is going to be Dwayne Lye before we give Tony the chance for the final word.
Dwayne Lye, retired General Services Director.
How's that feel?
I don't know yet. It's only been a few days. For those of you that know us, you know how close Tony and I have been for 28 years, and you're looking at a county legend, a real county legend. I don't know if there's a job title that really accurately portrays everything she's done in the last 28 years. Mail reception supervisor, she's really the concierge of not only my department but of the county, because she always had that effervescent, happy attitude towards everything related to the county. These 28 years together, Tony's been basically managing my life in the county, manages my calendar and sets up things, and she's organized the RSVP program, an incredibly successful program for the county. I don't know if your board's aware of it. Every year we have a General Services Academy that Tony organizes. We've done it 5 years in a row. It's won statewide recognition, and Tony took care of all the logistics. I just kind of call her in, sit in the office, and say, do it, and she does it. It's amazing. She's loved by all. You heard some good testimony this morning. And you know that she's a survivor. She not only had cancer once, she had it twice. She survived it both times. I think that made us all love her even more. There's no goodbyes here. Let's just see you around, kiddo.
See you around.
Tony, these are the rules. You get as much time as you want for the final word, but before you leave, we want Pete and your mom, Betty, to come up here, and we're going to get some group photos of you and this resolution we're going to give you. So other than that, you take as much time as you want.
Oh, well, I just want to say thank you to all my coworkers who I've been with for 30 years, and it's been fun the whole entire time, actually, except for a couple of years when I wasn't feeling very well, but other than that, it's been great, and I hope all county employees can have the bosses that I have had. And I'll just see you around. That's it.
Thank you, Tony.
Okay.
Dwayne, hold the flowers.
Or blame something. Somebody.
Dwayne can hold the flowers. Your mom should hold the flowers, and you should hold that. Okay.
That's a little better.
Linda, are we all in the focus
Dwayne,
here?
Dwayne, move a little bit to the right.
Somebody decided to work with somebody.
Oh, right.
Wow.
Okay, three, we all say Cacho.
Why?
Are
you doing a little closer up?
I only know what that meant.
Okay, and smile.
Thank you. Like I said, that was a bittersweet moment, and Tony, I just want to add that you are one class act. With that, Supervisor Obit, the senior member of the board, will honor a senior member who's also just retiring. Supervisor Obit, would you do the honors, please?
Oh, I'd love to. I mean, after all the publicity he got for his last day of work, he still came back with a tie on. Dwayne, would you?
The only tie I saved.
The only one you saved? Yeah. That and other times. I guess we're going to give you a commendation for over 27 years of service. That's if we get through this ceremony. But before you can speak again, we have George and Kalasha want to come up and say a few things. So let me read the resolution commending you on 27 years of service, which basically, as read here, started about June of 1980. Dwayne came to the county from Syracuse, New York. And you noticed I'm leaving a lot of the whereases out because they get boring after a while. And Dwayne's been through enough of these to know that he was an instrument in creation of general services and reorganization from the Department of Parks and Beaches. And this is where, really, if you've been here a while, Department of Parks and Beaches, Purchasing Department, Facilities Services Department, bringing accountability and new efficiencies to the county. Over the years, Dwayne's guidance, the county function of facility design, construction and maintenance, fleet operation, parks and golf course development, operations, airport development and operations, county real property management, purchasing, mail, reaper graphics, and has served the county's citizens and employees well. Hundreds of capital projects, including two government centers, regional center, major jail expansion, again, golf courses. And we'd like to tell a story about that golf course, if I can, in a second. We sent three people back to our bonding companies. One was Dwayne. One was, I can't think of his name, the parks guy at the time.
Tim Gallagher.
Tim Gallagher and our auditor, controller, none of which played golf. So they went back to finance a golf course, and it came back with high ratings, and we got that project done. But anyway, office buildings and has completed more than 1.5 million square feet of facilities and maintained them all under Dwayne's direction. Also under Dwayne, the direction of the Real Property Service Division was formed and developed into professional operation dedicated to managing county-owned real estate to the benefit of the public trust and providing the county departments with professional real estate assistance, and it relates to the real estate needs of their departments. The big one here, too, the airport, has grown exponentially since Dwayne's tenure on a general service. In the past 10 years, there have been two airport master plans, which I got to be on both of those, so I'm very proud of that, too. Were completed, and projects totaling more than $100 million have been constructed, and as you know, we finished the runway, and we're now going on towards the other improvements and finishing it up. And I don't know if they're going to put your name on it or not, Dwayne, but somewhere right about touchdown, right?
On the runway.
But anyway, the county fleet operations was comprised at the time when it came in here of about 175 vehicles, and it has grown to over an award-winning operation that now covers over 1,000 vehicles and pieces of equipment. And started the current vehicle depreciation system with facilities, facilitates a modern and reliable fleet. Dwayne has left a lasting mark on county operations, and the county of San Luis Obispo will forever be indebted for his years of dedication and service to the county and departments and the citizens of San Luis Obispo County. And whereas Dwayne has many outside interests, including a fleet of English and German and Japanese vehicles. This kind of goes along with his own fleet maintenance motorcycle. And you've ever had an exciting time to have had Dwayne pass you on his motorcycle, you know, and take one hand off and wave at you at 90 miles an hour, other than Cacho, you know. There's the other one. And I remember the day that Dwayne got his tractor. He was so enthralled with his tractor for his 2.5-3 acre piece, but he's the only picture you're seeing on, of course, is a red sports car. You don't see him on his green John Deere. So, Dwayne actively competes in long distance swimming events, including swimming to the Catalina Island, Alcatraz Island, and soon to become the Hawaiian Islands. You're going to swim there, or you just?
I'm going to swim from.
It's a long run. Dwayne is now taking a well-deserved time to enjoy a long life with his wife Linda. And now, therefore, be it resolved by and ordered that Dwayne Leib is congratulated on his retirement and that this board sincerely thanks him for all the years as the County Director of General Services and wish you long, happy, and healthy, productive retirement. Dwayne?
Come up. Come up.
We know that Dwayne wouldn't be anywhere as close as successful if he didn't have you by his side.
Somebody got to make him look good.
Happy. And she was riding on the back of the motorcycle. Yeah.
The Harley Mama.
Dwayne, before you get your final thoughts, we have Klosh coming up again, please.
Yeah, you are.
Got the landing lights on?
Oh. I guess I'm the talkative one in the group, huh?
Does Dwayne not deserve landing lights? Or?
Well, I can turn them on again if you'd like.
Yeah. Save energy.
I started working for the county and Dwayne the Monday after Thanksgiving, November 27, 1989, as an administrative services officer. At that time, we had 5 employees and 1 intern, and we were operating in the red. It was my task to turn that around, and we did it in pretty short order. And by the end of fiscal 91-92, the airport became self-sustaining and has kept that status ever since. I share this because a previous airport manager, who had left a few years before my arrival, told Dwayne airports our size couldn't make it on their own, and we would always need help to meet our operational expenses. Well, I don't think Dwayne ever shared that vision with that airport's manager, so here we are. Although we have certainly had our differences and we didn't see eye to eye on all issues, we were great debaters. The differences sometimes became the same path and we moved on together. I'm happy those occasions when the path became one goal were more frequent than not. We've experienced much, both personally and professionally, marriage, grandchildren, the death of siblings, and a parent prove life does indeed go on, as we experience great joy, but also sadness. The resolution with which you are being honored here today and the many tales we've told these last few weeks tell quite a story. Be proud and have a great time.
Next is going to be our acting director, General Services, George Rosenberg. I might say you're acting very well, George.
It's a tough act to follow. Chairman Lemthal, members of the board, George Rosenberger, General Services. In case anyone wondered who the attractive blonde was, it was standing up there with Dwayne, that's his wife, Linda. I assume everyone knows that.
You hope so, right?
I hope so. Either that or Dwayne's in trouble.
Yeah.
Well, Dwayne has endured several recognition functions over the last few weeks, and a lot has been said about Dwayne's many accomplishments while he's been with the county. But speaking of enduring, Dwayne also informs me that he's endured 20 individual board members, 5 CAOs, and over 1,300 board meetings.
Wow.
Now, there's an endurance record. And there's one small correction to the resolution. He also informed me that in his addition to his fleet of vehicles and motorcycles, he has 2 tractors.
Oh.
Not one. I know there's a John Deere, but there's got to be another one in there somewhere.
Probably a lawnmower.
Yeah. I think it was before he got the John Deere, he had a smaller, kind of like a Sears type of a tractor or something, but he doesn't like to talk too much about that.
Didn't measure up.
But he'll have it customized in a few more weeks.
Here's a V8 engine on his lawnmower.
Yeah. There's also a couple of additions to things that were not mentioned in the resolution. And that's that Dwayne has served and continues to serve on the County Pension Trust Board since January of 1983. And he should be recognized and thanked for all his efforts on behalf of all the members of the trust. Dwayne is also a founding and a lifelong member in the County General Services Association, which has provided an invaluable network for county departments of general services providing information to the direct benefit of San Luis Obispo County. So Duane has said all things must end. But he should take solace and be proud of all the accomplishments that he has directed over the last 27 years and 5 months. So, Duane, the best to you in your retirement from all of us in General Services.
Duane, before you get into your final thoughts here, give you a moment to collect yourself. I was just thinking that it was 22 years ago last month that we had a nice meeting out at the Vets Hall the day after we had one of our first riots in San Luis Obispo,
Ed Kennedy's concert.
And between that and a couple times when you said, I think first, you really want to land a helicopter in Cuesta Park and do what? We've also been good friends. It's been a pleasure to work with you. It's been a pleasure to know you. I just wish the best for you and Linda. And I know you're going to enjoy some of those toys and take some trips. And yeah. I look forward to the time that you might swing from San Luis Obispo to Hawaii and installment plan or whatever, because I know you're really
I won't go from here to there, but I'll go between the islands. I remember that meeting well. I think you were in charge when the fire hose blew the roof off the house next door. Is that accurate?
Let's not go into the details.
Okay. I said, who is that very tall, imposing man over there with the fire hose?
Mr. Cash was the district attorney at the time, and on the Vida County Council, I don't think I'm...
Okay. Well, I can't believe this is over. This has been one incredible journey, and as most journeys, the destination was predictable, but it's always been about the ride to get to this point. I knew it was going to come someday. I think I'm the longest-serving General Services Director in the history of the state of California. Some might say longest-suffering. But I want to say that, as far as I'm concerned, the success that I've enjoyed was easy. You just have to hire great staff. And I've been blessed in almost three decades of having some of the best staff in the state of California. And I say that with confidence because in my travels with the General Services Association, I got to measure my staff against other counties in this county has the best. Lots have come and gone. We've had lots of recent parties, and I've acknowledged my staff, but throughout the 28 years, I've had one assistant, and that's George Rosenberger. And you cannot ask for a better partner. You cannot ask for a better person to share all this success, all the challenges that we've had over the years. Some people are lucky to build one government center. We built two. You're sitting in one of them. And I need to acknowledge someone who hears it all every night at dinner, my wife Linda, who suffers with me, and we work it out, and we're looking forward to our first dinner conversation where the subject matter isn't the county. It's going to take a while, so we're going to Maui for the whole month of March, and we're going to try to work it out. Last of all, I'd like to thank two people that aren't with us anymore. My late parents, Harold and Hilda Leib, they never gave up on me. They always had confidence in my abilities, even when I was a punk kid that anybody would have thrown away. They stayed with me. And my thanks to all of you for all of your incredible support. It's been just an incredible career. It's coming to an end. It's another chapter that we're going to start. So, again, there's no goodbyes. It's just I'll see you around. Thank you.
And the only thing I add is I was also remiss in mentioning that not only thank you for your service to this county, but thank you for the service to our country as a veteran. And when you get back on vacation, if you're looking for a project, I might have a little helicopter for you to work on.
Should I make a comment?
Supervisor Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I haven't known Dwayne that long, though he doesn't remember this, I'm sure, but when I was the conservation manager for Atascadero Mutual Water Company, I called Dwayne because we were considering buying an electric vehicle. And I know County General Services was considering the same thing, and I was told to talk to Dwayne because he'd crunched the numbers for me. And I called him, and he did, and the original deal was a very good one, but of course things change over time, and some of the terms of the agreement didn't come through, so we ended up not doing it, and I think General Services ended up not doing it for the same reason. It just didn't pencil out, but I had contact with Dwayne then, and he didn't know who I was. I just rang him up, and he was willing to, discuss the options with me and give me the pros and cons about that particular purchase. But I found Dwayne to be that kind of a guy throughout my tenure here on the board. And whenever I had an issue or question, Dwayne's an upfront kind of guy. He doesn't mince his words, and he tells you the facts, and I appreciate that. And it's been great working with you, Dwayne, and I wish you luck. And as I was sitting here listening to you talking about your career here and what you're going to do afterwards, I thought of a song whose author I can't remember. I know Dwayne English. She's in the audience. He'll remember. But the title of the song is "The Road Goes On Forever, But the Party Never Ends." So I wish you luck, and I'm sure that's fitting for you.
Thank you. If there's no other comments of board members, we'll move on to public comment. First request to speak is David Dugan.
Why don't you give him a few minutes
of Should we take a two-minute break?
Just a second. It'll take him a few minutes.
Mr. Cuddy, I always hate to ask you to do it, but you sit in the last seat up there. Would you mind closing that back door, please, sir?
Want to give him a certificate at the end of your term?
Yeah. Next year, Mr. Cuddy, we're going to give you a certificate for being a door monitor and helping us ensure that we... With that, our first speaker is David Dugan, followed by Richard Markinson.
Dave Dugan, Los Osos. Today I'm not here to lambast or mention anything about lumps of coal in people's stock Christmas stocking. Actually, I'm on one of the subjects. I'd like to welcome back to the airways King Harris and the KVEC, our local radio station that unexpectedly had their show pulled from the air. And as much as I love my conservative talk radio, Laura Ingram's from 6 to 9 in the morning before a cup of coffee is not my cup of tea. And so I'm glad that they're back with our local news, our local weather, local traffic reports, as well as our interviews with our local government entities and such what, because it was much missed. And personally, I think we need that kind of radio program to where it's about local people and local subjects. And it was a shame that they had to be pulled from the air the way they were. This is the way I look at it. If it's not broke, don't try to fix it. And I'm glad they're back. Number two, I want to talk about water conservation. It's a big subject nowadays, not only in Los Osos, but in most places around, not just the county, but the state. And there was talk at Los Osos the other night at the LOCAC CSD meeting about replacing shower heads. And it came to my mind, a lot of bathtubs have showers. And if your spigot that goes to your bathtub has one of those little knobs you pull up to stop the water so it'll come through the shower head. If that leaks, you're not getting the benefit of the low-flow shower head. So I would say to people who are replacing things to make sure that spigot doesn't leak, because I've been to numerous homes where they have, and have seen the uselessness of having a low-flow shower head when those leak. And finally, I was heard on the news this morning that the road workers, I think this might be statewide, but in the last 2.5 months, there have been 3 deaths for people not slowing in the cone zone. And I just want to remind people that I believe the speed limit, unless otherwise posted lower, is 35 miles per hour through the cone zone. And you must just be aware that these people are out there working. They're out there early in the morning. Sometimes they're out there late in the afternoon, depending on the jobs. But that to be very careful around those people. They get tired, and maybe they may be a little too close to the edge, or maybe you're tired or messing with your cell phone or such what, or your cup of coffee, and you might inadvertently end up hitting, injuring, or killing one of these people. And I would just say that to be very careful and slow in the cone zone. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, and I also echo there have been 3 Caltrans employees that have died as a result of injuries from traffic accidents while they're working on the side of the road. So it's a good reminder for everybody, and especially sometimes Caltrans even has to work in the rain and do things out there. So we know the roads are slippery and things of that nature. So please slow for the cone zone and give them a break, I think is their motto on the signs. Mr. Markinson?
Richard Markinson. First thing I want to talk about is I have a question, and maybe Mr. Patterson or somebody from staff, if they're in the audience, could address the article in the paper dealing with the new position in the Department of Social Services for the homeless. The article is very confusing, and I got a number of calls on it. When you read the article, it actually sounds like the position has been downgraded from coordinator of homeless services to an assistant position that's now a full-time position going from a part-time position. If there could be some clarification, I tried to answer the questions as best I could, but I think if you or somebody could, from staff could answer where this position's actually going. The other thing I want to talk about, this will be the last time for many months, is we have some totals on the shelter event. First of all, I want to thank all of the volunteers. We would have never gotten through the day without the volunteers that came forward, and some of them worked the entire day. Also, all the businesses throughout the county that donated. When we went through the checks at the end of the count, there were every community in the county was represented. There was addresses from every city and every district in the county. I made a mistake last week and said that we were approximately 20% over what we did last year. Last year we did 18,867. We actually did just over 25,600. That's an increase of over 35%. And one of your county employees, while I was sitting in the back of the room, came in and handed me an envelope, and I'm sure there's a check in there, so that figure's even a little higher. The supervisors' lunches in total went for a little over $400. I won't tell you unless somebody asked who got the highest bid and who's got the lowest, unless somebody asked me. start saving your change for next year to fill the 5-gallon water jugs. And then the last comment I want to make is I want to reiterate again that the shelter's in need of blankets. I'm going to give the phone number again, 541-6351, the address 750 Orchid Road, and they could also use coffee. So if you want to drop off a can of coffee, that would be very helpful. And Jerry Walsh couldn't be here today. She's got the flu, but from the both of us, happy holidays, and thank you for all your help.
And Mr. Markinson, since we have a couple of seconds left, would you please repeat that? And also, just so you know, that we give the people in our audio time to type that in on the screen, and it actually comes over. So would you repeat the homeless address at 750 Orchid Road and also the phone number again, sir?
750 Orchid Road. It's right behind the gas station on the corner of Orchid and Broad. And the phone number again is 541-6351. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you. And Supervisor Patterson has a comment or question or maybe answer for you.
Okay.
Yeah, just a quick thank you again for you and Jerry for coordinating that event in Los Osos. It's growing, and congratulations on exceeding your 20% increase over last year, and I expect it to continue to grow the way it's been organized. And it's in its second year, or just was the second event, so I expect it to continue to grow. To answer your question, I don't want to misspeak regarding that homeless services coordinator. They actually combined a couple of positions, I know, to create a full-time position. So we would have somebody on board full-time rather than just part-time.
Okay.
I don't want to say any more than that.
Right. The article is confusing, and that's why I got questions from it. And thank you for talking about the increase. Our goal was to go 10% over, and that's our goal every year, because if you had 10% every year, you know, where will we be in 10 years? So if you gave $100 this year, give 110, and we'll hit that number next year. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard.
And I would just add, Mr. Chairman, that in that coordinator position there, as I read the staff report, they were having trouble recruiting at the halftime position.
Right.
So the function is the same, and I've actually met the person now at the Adult Services Policy Council. They're engaged and really, I think we're going to see an uptick in the activity on that.
Okay.
I'll add my congratulations and thanks for a great job on the...
And we're going to be talking about it today, the Homeless Advisory Council meetings at 11:30, so we'll get more. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker is Eric Greening, followed by Otto Schmidt.
Good morning. I am Eric Greening, delighted to see the season's first substantial rain. I hope it provides maximum dilution for the first flush of pollution that is currently surging down all the creeks to the ocean. I hope our water quality testing program takes note and that specific first flush samples are being taken regardless of the normal schedule. The only area of our county where the runoff does not reach the sea is the Carrizo Plain. This area is relatively pristine. However, as you know, there are big plans afoot. Solar energy is a good thing, and 93 million miles is a very good distance for a nuclear reactor to be. But the specific impacts of any project have to be thoroughly understood before we can take an informed position. While we are not the lead agency on the proposed solar power plant for the Carrizo, we are a responsible agency. Knowing that the proposed technology uses a great deal of water, it is important that we thoroughly understand the hydrologic balance of the proposed site and its surroundings. You will be making RMS findings next month. Will these findings include the area to the north and northwest of California Valley? If not, how can we fill this information gap? The clock is ticking. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Our last speaker is Otto Schmidt.
Good morning. This is, again, excerpted from an open letter written by Special Forces retired Kevin Tillman. And also,
Mr. Schmidt, excuse me, sir, but you need to state your name for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name's Otto Schmidt, Santa Margarita. Somehow our selected leaders continues to subvert international law and humanity by setting up secret prisons around the world, secretly kidnapping people, secretly holding them indefinitely, secretly not charging them with anything, and secretly torturing them. Somehow the more soldiers that die, the more legitimate the illegal invasion becomes. Somehow multi-billion dollar theft, corporate collusion, and profiteering from tragedy and horror is tolerated. Somehow the death and maiming of hundreds of thousands of innocent people is tolerated. Somehow subversion of the Bill of Rights and the United States Constitution is tolerated. Somehow the suspension of habeas corpus is supposed to keep this country safe. Somehow torture is tolerated. Somehow VA hospitals and VA mental health system is critically underfunded and unprepared for present war vets. Somehow lying is tolerated. Somehow the executive branch is above the law. Somehow the CIA and the Justice Department are above the law. Warrantless wiretapping and colluding corporations are above the law. Somehow mass murdering mercenaries are above the law. Somehow over 2.5 million Iraqi refugees are forced to roam the Mideast. Somehow threatening Armageddon and nuclear annihilation is tolerated. Somehow the most reasonable, trusted, and respected country in the world has become one of the most irrational, belligerent, and feared and distrusted countries in the world. Somehow being politically informed, diligent, skeptical, has been replaced by apathy through active ignorance. Somehow the same incompetent, narcissistic, virtuous, vacuous, malicious, arrogant criminals are still in charge of this country. Somehow this is tolerated. Somehow nobody is accountable for this. Pity the nation whose people are sheep and whose shepherds mislead them. Pity the nation whose leaders are liars, whose sages are silence, and whose bigots haunt the airways. Pity the nation that raises not its voice except to praise conquerors, exclaim and acclaim the bully as hero, and aim to rule the world with force and torture. Pity the nation that knows no other language but its own and no culture but its own. Pity the nation whose breath is money and sleeps the sleep of the too well-fed. Pity the nation, oh, pity the people who allow their rights to erode and their freedoms to wash away. My country, tears of thee, sweet land of liberty. Show integrity, courage, and conscience. I am again asking you to add your agenda for the first meeting of this board in the year 2008, a resolution to demand the impeachment of the President and Vice President of the United States of America. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments, and isn't it wonderful we live in a country where everyone can have freedom of speech? With that, we'll move on to our consent agenda items for public comment. I did receive four requests to speak. First is David Dugan, followed by Eric Greening.
Dave Dugan, Los Osos. I'm going to speak towards B8, which is the adding some vehicles and a small mortar boat to the mosquito control. I remember in November a meeting about the disease vector program and concerning mosquitoes and West Nile disease. And I spoke towards the fact that it was an item on paying $25,000, I believe, for a assessment survey. See whether or not an assessment vote would bring money people to vote on an assessment to be assessed for around $1 million for this program. And I got up there and said I approve the program, but not of its funding, because I thought grants should be exhausted first. And I don't remember during that meeting whatsoever this $43,000 that was okayed in August, or that they were aware of by in August, was even mentioned then. If it was, then I apologize. But this goes to show that grants can go a long way. Because right after that agenda item, somebody stopped me outside and said, well, and a proponent for the assessment, and said, well, you know, it's all fine and dandy to go for grants, but grants soft money. We need this hard money to get vehicles. And here we are with grants getting vehicles. Now, that's the way we should go first. Exhaust every avenue towards grants. If we can fund the majority of this with grants, then the assessment can be a lot smaller than you want people to pay. And I don't care if it's $10 or $5. You start adding assessment dollars for this program or that program, and it becomes very hard for people to be able to pay their tax bill, to be able to live in their homes without having an overburden of assessment dollars coming out of their property. So, again, I say, okay, do this. This is fine. This is grant money. Do this. But to continue to search out grant funding for this program until you, I believe, until you have to go to an assessment. I looked at the numbers, and even though the reporting numbers were up for mosquito problems, the cases of West Nile were down in all areas. And if it's up in reporting but down in all areas, I think the education and the ability for this department to go out and take care of these problems is not only has been working, but will be enhanced through these grant kind of grants, and I think we can take care of this problem with mostly grants. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Eric Greening, followed by Tom Jones.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening on item B14, a shrinking and reorganization of the Department of Planning and Building. I'm concerned about the proposal to remove the position of county geologist because I believe that independent, publicly accountable peer review is a prerequisite for informed decision-making. If planning and building truly lacks the funds to support this position, I would propose that the responsibility be shared with public works, for whom the geologists can also perform valuable service. I know that in the immediate aftermath of the earthquake of 2003, our geologist was busily examining the geologic underpinning of bridges and other infrastructure, and such a person could have an important role in planning for future infrastructure. Relative to the other reorganization, I would like to ask what the effect would be on our long-range planning efforts. I would be more comfortable if a decision like this were being made when you were also looking at priorities and timelines for those efforts, especially since you have just given the department extra work relative to allowing private consultants to second-guess the NRCS soil maps, leading to unpredictable impacts from ag policies that were about to be incorporated into the conservation element. And now we have added environmental, rather unpredictable environmental impacts to somehow review before this can be done. I see no urgency about passing B14 and would ask you to continue this item until it can be agendized as a public hearing item where all the consequences can be thoroughly discussed. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Tom Jones, followed by Dave Flynn.
Good morning, Chairman Linthal, members of the board. Tom Jones, representing Pacific Gas and Electric Company this morning. Item B17 is our proposal to enter into a long-term local government partnership with the County of San Luis Obispo. I'd like to first thank David Edge, Director Holanda, and Dave Clue for meeting with us to look at this program. We have a two-tiered strategy with the county. Short run to invest about $500,000 on a triple incentive structure with the county, thereby any rebate the county would get would be three times greater than any other customer, to dramatically increase your energy efficiency and reduce your capital expenses. Part of the reason this is necessary is the county has been so good at energy efficiency, the low-hanging fruit is gone. So we're very excited about that partnership. The long-range goals of the program for 2009 and beyond will include training for planners, things like that, which is, again, I want to thank Mr. Holanda for his vision, where we can help the county with this fund train staff to incent programs and developments that come in the door so that they'll have the latest training in how to reduce energy consumption of the built environment. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. And it's also a pleasure when people come up during public comment and commend staff. So on behalf of Mr. Holanda, I see his head nodding firmly over there, but thank you for commending him and also Dr. David Edge. Mr. Flynn.
Good morning. Dave Flynn with Public Works Department. On your agenda today is item B22, which is a traffic regulation for a prohibition of overnight camping in Avila Beach and Cayucas. On Avila Beach Drive, the intention of the ordinance was to include Avila Beach Drive in the enforcement area. In some recent discussions with the Port of San Luis Harbor District, they have some issues about how this would pertain to their properties along Avila Beach Drive. Although we reviewed a solution with our county council, it would be prudent to pull this item from the agenda today so that we can review it once more with the port staff. So we'd recommend to pull item B22.
Thank you, Mr. Flynn. With that, Supervisor Ovett, any items on the consent agenda for you, sir?
B17 is just a correction on the whereas clause, and I've already informed the clerk. It's just a clerical thing. Too many now, therefore, be resolved. That's all I got.
Supervisor Patterson?
Yes, it's in the 30s. I don't have the number exactly here, but I'll find it.
B30-something.
Yes, B30-something.
Well, then I'll move on down the list. I am going to pull B22. I plan on doing that for some discussion and a comment. Supervisor Asajj?
None, thank
you. Supervisor Gibson?
Brief comment on, I'd like to ask staff just a quick question on B14 and some comments on B33, please.
Okay, while we're waiting for Supervisor Patterson to come up with his numbers.
I've got it.
Oh, you've got it.
32.
Yeah.
I just want to comment on the Carrizo Plain. If
Fire Station Number 42, CAL FIRE. It was completed, and we have before us today a construction contract that is finalized, and it's been a long time coming. The folks in the California Valley graciously received the new equipment that is housed in the new fire department. It has a rescue vehicle as well as a new fire engine, and a month ago we gathered volunteers from CAL FIRE as well as the community to landscape that facility, and that's done. And along with the facility, the community has a small park and picnic area that will be maintained by the CAL FIRE firefighters. So it was a plus for the California Valley and the Carrizo Plain. And I just wanted to thank General Services, who I don't see any reps. Oh, there's
George in the corner.
For moving that project through. And now we're on to Creston for a fire station there.
And I'm glad you just pulled that for comment, because now we're going to go from the highest number backwards. I thought you were just going to give me the number. So now that we've started at 32, we'll work our way down. No, well, actually, we'll start on the lower number. Supervisor Gibson, you wanted to start with B-14, sir?
Yes, I wonder if Mr. Holanda might just enlighten the public briefly on how geologic... county geologist services will be provided without a specific individual as the county geologist, and then just briefly the new division that's part of this other item. Speak briefly to its tasks.
Sure. Answering your first question, the county geologist will be handled by a consultant which we have on board now. The new division, called the Strategic Planning Community Development Division, in essence combines some functions, so that we can focus on issues that are brought to the department's attention, specifically inquiries regarding projects, complaints. In essence, we're going to have an ombudsman person in this unit. We're going to be coordinating activities that require a dedicated staff to look at the actual implementation of the plans that you folks adopt. There's never been a program where we look at the policies or the implementation measures and actually follow through. So that's one of the things we're going to be working on.
And just if I could, back on the geologist issue, basically there are certain sorts of applications that do get specific review by the county in a geologic fashion. And I'm understanding in meetings with you that all those applications that would get reviewed if we had someone on staff are going to get reviewed by a consultant.
By a geologist, right, who we are consulting with, right, who we have executed a contract with. He is on board.
Great. Thank you.
Mr. Ron, if I just may add on that, because I think you just touched on it briefly, of the ombudsman, using your terminology,
sure,
that through our discussions, if you would just take a moment in two or three sentences, this is something that we've identified, at least in the last 3 years I've had the pleasure of working with you, as a real need to have almost one-stop shopping to ensure some continuity in your office of program. Could you just elaborate
absolutely
on a couple of minutes?
Well,
with people with that? I think it's a good opportunity here.
Sure. As you all know, all of you have issues in your own areas of concern, in your own districts, and you know who to call in our department. There are several staff members who are contacted by you and your aides, as well as the general public or consultants or engineers. What we don't look at is what is the cost of that disruption to all the different staffs who already have responsibilities of doing work that it's being paid for. By having an ombudsman, you will now have your staff contact the ombudsman, or if our front counter person or our telephone answering service has a concern or complaint, they'll direct those calls to one specific person. I think that given the shrinking budget, we can no longer afford to have one-on-one service that I think we're all accustomed to. We need to consolidate. We need to focus in on priorities, and this is one of the reasons why we're doing this. We'll be saving a tremendous amount of money by taking the load off quite a few staff members.
Thank you, sir. Supervisor Robert, want to go down to B-17 now?
I didn't ask for B-17.
Yeah, you wanted to change something.
Oh, no, I said I've already notified the clerk of what the change was. It was one of the last whereas.
Thank you.
There's just a duplication in wording, and he's asking that the first part be removed, so it's not there twice.
Okay. Thank you. I intended to pull B-22. I've been in contact with Steve McGrath, who's in the audience tonight, who is our new harbor manager for Port San Luis Harbor District, and there was some wordsmithing or reworking that needs to be done on B-22, and I would like it to be pulled from the agenda and brought back at an undetermined later date after Mr. Flynn and staff has a chance to do some of this rewording to ensure that we have a sign that's clearly understood by everybody, not just the violators, but county staff, harbor district staff. And ultimately, too, it'll pass the legal challenge if somebody's issued a citation for $200 that they've done the right thing. With that,
we'll approve off the balance of
and we got B33, Mr. Chairman.
I'm sorry, right, B33 at the end.
Yeah, this is an item to ratify the adoption by the Cambria Community Services District of their international fire code. And the staff report lays out a slight conflict in the provisions. Their fire code is proposing to have fire sprinklers applicable to houses or structures over 2,000 square feet. And our board will remember we adopted our countywide fire code to have sprinklers in structures over 1,000 square feet. How it got to this point is not important. But I did wonder if I could ask Mr. Edge, there are various ways in which we can rectify this, and the staff's recommendation at this point is that we go ahead and pass, ratify what's before us today, that the CSD is going to take it up and come back to modifications. And so a little bit about that process, and I just want to be sure that we have a chance in the end, no matter what their action is, to get this thing squared away down the line.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks, Mr. Chairman, David Edge, County Administrator. Yeah. This is one of those processes where this Community Service District adopts this, but your Board of Supervisors has to do the ratification. Supervisor Gibson has outlined the difference, which is essentially the 2,000 square foot versus 1,000 square foot for the requirement for automatic sprinkler installation. Fire Chief Bob Putney is supportive of the more restrictive code that the county adopted. The Community Services District had adopted their measures prior to the county taking action. We're recommending that at this point you go ahead and approve the CSD's proposed language, which is less restrictive. Bob is intending to propose amendments to his board, and it'll come back. The reason we're proposing you take action on it today is that if you don't adopt, it's a calendar issue. If you don't adopt this by the end of the calendar year, then the basic fire code rules, 2007 fire code rules, go into effect for the Cambria area, which don't include any sprinkler requirements. And obviously that would provide a window, which nobody is happy about, the lack of rules. If you adopt this today, that at least has the basic rule that Cambria initially adopted in place. And as I said, the fire chief's indicated that he'll be asking his Community Services District Board to amend their ordinance to adopt the 1,000-square-foot requirement to be consistent with the county process.
So I just wanted to confirm with admin that we could, independent of what action the CSD board may or may not take in January, that we could look to have this back by early February to be sure that we're closing up this
right,
this
gap. And I should add the board does have the authority to modify this ordinance off their own bat. The basic challenge is, and I don't think it'll come to that because it sounds like the fire chief is and feels that his board will support where this board has gone. If your board made a change today, then that has to go back to the CSD board for their action before it can come back to your board for final approval, and that period of time would then provide that rollover at the end of the calendar year, hence the recommendation we're making today.
That said, we'll be happy to go forward as it is on the calendar.
Okay, we have a motion by Supervisor Sajjan with the amendments and adjustments made. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Supervisor Ovitt. Madam Clerk, a roll call, please.
Mr. Sajjan?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye. With that, we're going to take a 15-minute break.
There you go.
CSD.
If we can get everybody to come back to order and...
No, you couldn't do it. Okay, now you're okay.
Now I'm on. Now we're on?
Yes.
Okay, we can come back to order. Madam Clerk, would you introduce the next item, please?
Next item on your agenda is item C1. This is a hearing to consider a 2007 priority list for future underground utility projects. All districts' recommendation is for approval.
Good morning, Mr.
Smith,
Chairman.
Smith, are you going to start off here?
And Honorable Board, yes. I'm Tim Smith, your county right-of-way agent and also secretary for the county Underground Utility Coordinating Committee for the county.
And Mr. Smith, if I may, before you get too far into your presentation, may I say this is going to be one of your last presentations, and I'll miss hearing you talk about different things and explain things to us.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Being my representative, I really appreciate that, too.
I just got a commitment from Mr. Smith. As I mentioned last week, he was serenading the Habitat for Humanity group up in Atascadero at a groundbreaking at a project up there, and he's offered to come back and help us build those houses. So we'll put him to good use.
Well,
there you go. Mr. Smith, no one ever said your last day is going to be as easy as your first day on the job, did they?
So much. Ask for a contract extension. Mr. Stokes also is retiring. He's offered to drive nails, too, so we'll get a couple of engineers out there. Anyway, item C1 is the consideration of the priority list, which is being updated for your consideration. The San Luis Obispo County Coordinating Committee, Underground Coordinating Committee, provides conversions of overhead utility facilities to underground in compliance with the California PUC in conjunction with their Tariff Rule 20A and 32A rules. Over the past 30 years, the county has undergrounded under a very aggressive underground utility program, converting overhead facilities in more than 27 specific areas throughout the county from San Simeon to Oceana, from Cambria to Shandon. The conversion costs have been over $12 million throughout the county. This board recently recognized participating utility companies for their District 23, which was the Highway 1 project between Morro Bay and Cayucas. As I said, an aggressive program, and we have members of the utility committee, which was formed in 1976, for the four utility companies plus two public members to be represented on this coordinating committee. And two of those public members are here today, Chairman John Brock from Cayucas, who's been chairman for over 10 years, is here, and also the other public member is John Wallace. The committee is presenting its recommended 2007 priority list for the future county projects. Presently, we have four underway from a previous priority list. That's South Main Street in Templeton. The next one will be Broad Street City-County Joint Project. That's from Orchid Road to the regional airport area. Los Osos Valley Road in Los Osos, between Buckskin and the Los Osos Creek. And then finally, Underground Utility District Number 29 is El Camino Real in Santa Margarita. Those are authorized under resolution, so the committee and the utility companies will be working on those. But the matter before you today are the priority lists that submit for your action and for your recommendation and adoption for this list. This would be San Luis Street and Avila between First and Avila Beach Drive. Number two would be South Bay Boulevard in Los Osos, Turi Road to Morro Bay City Limits. Third Tank Farm Road project between Broad Street and South Higuera. Fourth is State Highway. This would be San Bernardo Creek Road to Canay. Fifth would be K Street in San Miguel. That's between 12th and 14th Street, or 13th Street. And that's in conjunction with the efforts by San Miguel improvement people in their recreational efforts. Six, Quintana Road near Morro Bay. Seven, San Isabel Avenue in Los Osos between 3rd Street and South Bay Boulevard. The eighth is Cienaga Road in Oceano. Ninth, Mission Street in San Miguel. Mission to 14th Street. And then number 10 would be Orchard Avenue in Napomo, Story to Teff Street. That is the list that we're presenting. I'd be available to answer any questions you may have. And we have our members, public members here on the committee available also. Thank you.
Supervisor Rovett?
Yeah, just a question on the one on Mission Street. Do you mean the Mission?
Yes, sir.
Because it's the Mission Street is a street, so.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
So it would be the Mission or San Miguel Mission?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Smith, I want to thank you just for making San Luis Street and Avalon number one. We've been working on it for about 3 years, and it's always nice to be number one.
You're welcome.
But, yeah, the other thing I was going to say that.
It took 3 years to get there, but.
Yeah. Mission Street is set to be paved next
right.
year,
right.
and so they're going to try to do this.
Well, this is on the priority list. It's going to take a while to get to. We have four pending right now, and then it's going to be.
Because the issue is we don't want to go back and tear up street that they just put in.
Okay. Correct. Yes, sir.
With that, if there are no other questions or comments from board members, we'll open to the public. The only request I have to speak is Marshall Olchilski. Ms. Rojas, again, nice tie for Christmas.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Marshall Ohilski. I just wanted to come and say that we appreciate all the work that the committee's done on this and the ranking, and we support the recommendation. So I'm here just to give a commendation to staff. That's the end of my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Anytime someone takes time out of their busy day to come down here and thank staff, it's always a good thing to receive. With that, we'll close public comment. Bring it back to the board. Supervisor Gibson.
That's fine. I'll second Mr. Ovid's motion. I was just going to comment that this is a great program. Provides safety and aesthetic benefits.
I don't believe your microphone's on, sir.
No. My words are still important, even if my microphone's not on.
Just trying to help you out.
I'll just speak so they can hear me out in the street. Yeah. No, I was just going to say that this is a great program that has provided both safety benefits and aesthetic improvements, and look forward to seeing these projects taken off as they get there. You know, folks listening should also know that neighborhoods by neighborhood can form assessment districts to pay for that undergrounding themselves. We've had many successful projects in Cayucas in particular, and I'm pleased to second Mr. Ovid's motion to approve this.
Supervisor Patterson?
Yeah, I would just like to thank the members of the Underground Utility Coordination Committee because, like so many projects and programs throughout the county and the various cities as well, we have people volunteer to help advise and facilitate government actions, and this is an example of where the public's come together to lend a hand here, to work with government cooperatively to get the best results. So. Appreciate those efforts.
I second those efforts because thank you, Ms. Wallace. I know you have a lot of things to do, and it's a rainy day. To come down here is not always convenient. So not only do you work and volunteer time for these important committees, but you follow through to the end. With that, we have a motion by Supervisor Ovid, seconded by Supervisor Gibson. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Carries unanimously. Madam Clerk, would you introduce the next item, please?
Thank you.
Next item on your agenda is item C2. This is a hearing to present annual roadway improvement fee reports. This is in the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th districts. Recommendation is to receive and file.
Mr. Chapman, look like you're all ready to go here and powered up. And
thank you. I'm Ryan Chapman and I'm from Public Works, and I'm here today to present the annual roadway impact fee reports.
Mr. Chapman, if I may, when Mr. Green and other people hold their ear, that means they can't hear you or people in the back, so would you please get closer to the microphone or raise your voice a little bit?
Okay. I'm here to present the annual roadway impact fee reports. Once a year, we present this information to you under provisions in the government code. Here is a table of the existing fee structures for the six communities we're talking about today, Avila, Cambria, Los Osos, San Luis Obispo Fringe, San Miguel, and South County. These are the fees that were adopted by your board last year, and we are not asking you to change them at this time. Currently, the account balance is at the end of the fiscal year, at the beginning and the end of the last fiscal year. This table shows the building activity for the last fiscal year. There were two appeals in the South County fee, of the South County fee. Both were denied by your board. And the communities in the fee area maps for Avila, the North Coast, Detail, Cambria, San Luis Obispo Fringe, San Miguel, South Bay Los Osos and South County. It is our recommendation that your board receive the attached 2007 roadway impact fee report, and staff will be returning to your board in early 2008 with proposed updates to the fees. Questions?
That concludes your presentation?
Yes.
Thank you. Any questions of Mr. Chapman from board members?
Are there other, I know Templeton's not in here, but that's because we take that separately, but like Nacimiento, they have a road improvement fee out there that's not included in here?
That one was put together as a condition of an environmental impact report, and it's not updated in the same way as these are.
Okay, but I know there's funds that I know we're using some of the funds, but it's on development at just Heritage Ranch?
Yes.
I was under the assumption Oak Shores and everything else were involved with that. We'll check later.
Yeah.
Okay, if there's no additional questions, we'll open up to the public. I did not receive any requests to speak, seeing no one step forward. We'll close public comment, bring it back to the board.
Move to receive and file. Second.
Moved by Supervisor Asajj and seconded by Supervisor Gibson. And under discussion, Mr. Chapman, I think also because of the Christmas and Thanksgiving time of year, that Mr. Flynn and the audience is a big part of this report and how this went so smoothly. And Mr. Flynn, I want to thank you for your efforts in doing this and sending Mr. Chapman up here to be your representative and represent us. With that, we have a motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Carries unanimously. Madam Clerk, could you introduce the next item, please?
Next item on your agenda is item D1. This is a request to approve the use of the proposed annual reporting and formation guidelines for community advisory councils for all districts. Recommendation is for approval.
Mr. Hogue.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Happy holidays. I'm Warren Hogue, Department of Planning and Building. Before your board today are proposed guidelines for verifying that the formation and ongoing operation of community advisory councils complies with the criteria for board-recognized advisory groups in the resolution that your board adopted a few years ago. It's resolution number 96485. Your board considered a draft manual for this purpose last May, and at that time you asked that suggested wording be added and it be referred back to the advisory councils for review and comment. And the manual was revised. It was retitled as guidelines, and it was reviewed with the advisory council chairs at their quarterly meeting on June 2nd. The changes requested by the chairs at that time were included in a new draft, which the chairs then took to their advisory councils for review and comment. And all changes that have been requested by the advisory councils have been included in the proposed guidelines that are now before your board today. Part of the guidelines, part one, is a checklist for each advisory council to complete and submit annually, verifying that they are in compliance with the criteria in your board resolution 96485. The checklist would be submitted to the particular advisory council's district supervisor for concurrence that they satisfy the criteria and are recognized as a representative body for their community. As requested by the chairs, the checklist has been revised to clarify that advisory councils do make recommendations, and that when they do so, they're to include comments which explain their reasons for supporting or not supporting a proposal. There's also been an addition of an acknowledgement that advisory councils don't directly approve or deny projects. There's also a list of requirements for establishing and recognizing a new advisory council. That's in part two of the proposed guidelines. It's recommended that your board approve these proposed guidelines dated December 6, 2007, that's shown in attachment one of your packet. That concludes my presentation. Can I answer any questions for you?
Are there any questions of board members of Mr. Hogue? Mr. Hogue, I have no lights, so maybe you can sit down and we'll see after we have public comment. Eric Greening, any other requests we have to speak?
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and I think in general these are good guidelines. One thing that I brought to your attention about a year ago, and I don't see it, I still think it could be argued that it's important, and that is I recognize that these are self-formed entities. They're not constructions by the county, and so we've had legal opinion that they don't have to abide by the Brown Act. However, to the extent that you assume that when you're hearing from the advisory councils, you're hearing from the community, it's the opportunity for the community to make itself heard at the advisory council meetings. more conveniently than coming here in the middle of a Tuesday. I think it is important that the councils know that they are expected to inform the community in advance of what items they are going to be taking action on, and that they give the public of those communities the opportunity to be heard before they make their own recommendations, so that you can truly and fully assume that you are actually hearing from the community. And that I've known occasions when advisory councils have had items that just sort of come up at the last minute. They have taken positions, and the community has not known positions were being taken in their name, not had the opportunity to decide to show up at the meeting and be heard on that sort of issue. So I just think it would be a good addition to make some kind of language that makes it clear that while they are not legally required to abide by the Brown Act, they, if they're going to be the voice of their community, they need to let the community know what they are going to be considering and give the community the chance to participate at the meeting before the decision is made. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. That was the only request to speak I have. No one else steps forward. We'll close public comment.
I move staff's recommendation.
Second. Moved by Supervisor Esajian, second by Supervisor Bobit. Under discussion, Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I would, just following up on what Eric just said, there is actually, in terms of the compliance, item 4 in the checklist, which shows up on, it's hard to read the numbers, but it's page 4 of the, printed page 4 of the guidelines, that community advisory council meetings occur regularly and are publicly noticed in a timely manner, open to the public, and include a public comment period. What Eric is mentioning here is important. The advisory councils are creations of their communities, and I think that's important that they are self-formed, coming from the interest of the community and representing themselves to their government. They are not covered by the Brown Act, but I've always made it a point with the advisory councils I've dealt with that they should abide by the spirit of the Brown Act, which is openness and notice, and leads to the more general sense that I have that the influence of an advisory council really derives purely from the quality of its process. So openness to the wide diversity of views within a community, and a good faith effort to try to reconcile those toward consensus, even if consensus can't be reached in every instance, I think are the important things in this vitally important institution that we're lucky to have in this county. So I'm very supportive of the guidelines. I'd like to thank staff and Warren in particular for the time he spends working with the advisory councils and this sort of thing. I think it really is important work that you do.
Supervisor Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to concur with what Supervisor Gibson said. I think we've all had issues with our various advisory councils at one point or at one time or another, and I think the effort that the Planning Department put into establishing this criteria and these guidelines will go a long way and help alleviating those problems. And we do have an ability, and I share Mr. Greening's concerns about things being brought up spontaneously without public notice and then the advisory committees acting on that. We've had that situation occur more than once in one of my advisory committees, and we've addressed that. And I think that should we have that problem individually, as supervisors, we can work with our advisory committees and make sure that that doesn't happen and address it there rather than trying to amend the guidelines and recommendations by staff at this point.
Motion by Supervisor Esajian, second by Supervisor Ovett. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Carries unanimously. Thank you very much. Madam Clerk, introduce the next item, please.
Next item on your agenda is item E1. This is submittal of a resolution for approval of certificates of participation, financing documents, which have been clerk's filed, to fund the Vineyard Drive Interchange Improvement Project. This is in the 1st District. Recommendation is for approval and instruct the chairperson to sign.
Mr. Clemens, would you like to lead off?
Thank you.
Yes, Chairman Lenthal, members of the board, my name is Will Clemens with your Public Works Department. This is the time to consider a resolution to approve the form of legal documents which would finalize the issuance of certificates of participation in order to fund the Vineyard Drive Interchange Improvement Project. Your board gave conceptual approval of this financing plan on November 6, 2007, when the plans and specs were advertised for bids. Since that time, we've received nothing but good news. First off, Standard & Poor's upgraded the county's credit rating for this deal to a AA-, which reflects the stable economy in our county, but also reflects strong fiscal management based on recommendations from the administrative office and the auditor controller. So that's something to be very proud of. In fact, the market would rather purchase our credit than the credit of those bond insurers that usually would insure this type of issuance. And in fact, we're going to go out without bond insurance because the market deems our county's credit as more favorable than those corporations who are in that business. So that's good news. Other good news, on December 6th, the bids were opened and came in significantly lower than anticipated. This resulted in a lower par amount that needs to be issued, which is this staff report was prepared prior to having that information. So we're going to only need to issue about $7.1 million in COPs as opposed to the $8 million stated in the staff report. This has a resulting lower annual debt service, now estimated to be about $462,000 annually as opposed to the $509,000 stated in the staff report. Debt service is going to be paid by road improvement fee collections in the Templeton area, and if in any year that is insufficient to cover the cost, the general fund would need to loan the road impact fee fund the money, which would be repaid with interest. And so I want to emphasize that since this would be a loan, this is in no way going to hinder the amount that you can budget from the general fund next year. But this is more of a decision on where you want to invest your reserves. So rather than investing them in perhaps U.S. Treasuries or another instrument, it's deciding to invest in a local project. And I would say it's similar to our cooperative road projects that we've done over the years, which has been successful in funding local roads with loans from the general fund. And it provides a return on investment to the general fund equal to that which is earned in the county pool. If your board approves this resolution, we would issue the certificates of participation in January. We would award the contract to the construction contractor in January. That would enable construction to commence in February or March, and it's anticipated that it would be completed in the first half of 2009. So our recommendation is that you adopt this resolution, and that's the end of my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions, Mr. Clemens, of board members? Thank you for bringing us good news. And, Mr. Seabach, I'm sure you're part of the reason we have good news and good financial credit.
At least part of that golf course, that crew that went out and got the golf course financed, too. I just want to enter in the record that I received a letter from Chronic Moskowitz, signed by Ken Borlenhurt. I just got it this morning, so I don't think anybody else might have got it. And it's concerning Bennett Way. And I think you have a speaker here on that, too. Okay.
With that, we'll open to the public. The only request I have to speak is Mr. Michael Ryder. Mr. Ryder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mike Ryder with JM. I don't really have much to say. I just congratulations. That's great on the numbers. Terrific. Look forward to that road being built. I thank you for the staff report, including the comments about funds being reserved for the Bennett Way. We really need that money, so I appreciate that. The only thing that was missing, and we didn't really have anything to look at, was just the priority payments to the Bennett Way obligation from 2004. So that's all I have to say, and appreciate your support, and good luck on your road.
Thank you for your comments. That was my only request to speak. Seeing no one else step forward, we'll close public comment, bring it back to the board.
I was going to move to approve the resolution.
Second. I'll second.
Moved by Supervisor Ovett, seconded by Supervisor Esajian. Madam Clerk, a roll call, please.
Mr. Ovett?
Aye.
Mr. Esajian?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye. Madam Clerk, would you introduce the next item, please?
Yes. Now your board is adjourning as the Board of Supervisors, and you're reconvening as the Board of Directors of the San Luis Obispo Public Facilities Corporation. And item E2 is submittal of a resolution for approval of certificates of participation, financing documents, the clerk's filed to fund the Vineyard Drive Interchange Improvement Project. Recommendation is for approval.
Thank you for reading that. It saves me reading that. I had it here.
There I go.
In the script here. Mr. Clemens, will you continue?
I believe you perhaps need to have public comment at this time as and then approve the minutes from the last meeting.
Just a quick check with Madam Clerk. Does the chair need to formally adjourn and convene, or is your reading of it sufficient?
Well, I would just check with counsel since I did that and asked them how they'd like for that to be handled.
That's correct. I think you'd have to adjourn and then reconvene as the.
Thank you. I want to make sure body. That we do everything the right way. So we are going to adjourn as the Board of Supervisors and reconvene as the Board of Directors of the San Luis Obispo Public Facilities Corporation. Before we take public comment, Mr. Clemens, did you have anything that you wanted to put out here?
Just briefly, this is a companion item to what your board. What the Board of Supervisors just approved. This would be a similar resolution to approve the financing documents in your capacity as the Board of Directors of the Public Facilities Corporation.
Yeah, I did not receive any requests to speak during public comment. Is there anyone wishing to step forward from the public to comment on this item? Seeing none, we'll close public comment, bring it back to the board. Supervisor Gibson.
Just wondered if Mr. Clemens had gotten the small correction for the minutes that Director Bianchi at the January 23rd meeting had a good excuse for not being there and probably should be removed.
She was still on the board, though, at that time.
On January 23rd of 07? I know you tried to call me Shirley a couple times. But
No, that was Katrina, not me.
Yeah. Shirley,
well,
you, Shirley, you
minutes.
Must understand.
There's one rule.
We will take her off.
Thank you.
With that, I move approval of the minutes as corrected.
Is that our own? And we have other actions.
And a resolution. Go ahead and do the resolution if you want to.
Okay.
I'll second it.
So be it.
We have a motion. We have approval of the resolution by Supervisor Esajian, seconded by Supervisor Ovett. Madam Clerk, a roll call, please.
Mr. Esajian?
Aye.
Mr. Ovett?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Surely.
Mr. Linthal.
Yes. With that, we are now going to adjourn as the Board of Directors of the San Luis Obispo Public Facilities Corporation and reconvene as the Board of Supervisors and move on to closed session. Is there anyone wishing to step forward from the public? I did not receive any requests to speak for items on closed session. With that, Mr. Cash.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Wyatt Cash from the County Council's office. The board's about to go into closed session on items listed on the agenda.
I hear.
Thank you. We'll be adjourned to closed session, and we'll see you at 2 o'clock. Oh, wait a minute. There we go.
Where's Paula?
You wait.
We'll be waiting for
her.
Okay. You're on.
Thank you. Welcome to our 2 o'clock afternoon session. Would County Council like to report out of our 2 hour and 47 minutes, 32 seconds of closed session?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Warren Jensen from the County Council's office. The board did meet in closed session, discussed a number of the items on the agenda, took no final action, so no further reports required.
So all the 12 hours plus 2 hours worth of seconds. Merry Christmas, boys.
For the public, that was a short summary of a 2 hour and 47 minute and 37 second conversation. With that, Madam Clerk, would you introduce the next item, please?
Next item on your agenda is item F1. This is an update on the Los Osos Wastewater Treatment Project, 2nd District. A, to accept the weekly project update. B, to receive public comment. And C, consideration of adoption of a resolution overruling all protests submitted prior to and at the end at the public hearing on October 23, 2007. Approve the engineer's report as amended, levy the assessments, and direct due diligence review of the wastewater project as directed by AB 2701. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
With that, who would like to lead off?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mark Hutchinson, Department of Public Works. We have a multi-part update this afternoon with one action item, and I'll begin with the action item. On August 28, 2007, your board initiated the Proposition 218 ballot proceedings by preliminarily approving the assessment engineer's report, and you set the date for the public hearing on that 218 election for October 23, 2007. At that public hearing, your board received testimony in opposition and in favor of the proposed assessment from members of the public. Subsequently, the clerk of the board counted the ballots and certified the results on October 26, 2007. Your board ratified the results of the ballot process on November 6, 2007. Yes votes amounted to 79.67% and no votes 20.33%. Consistent with the requirements of Proposition 218, county staff has reviewed all protests submitted, written protests, and has submitted a memo to your board with the response to those protests. It is included as Exhibit B to the resolution. The key action item then today is the adoption of the resolution overriding those protests, approving the amended engineer's report, levying assessments for the Los Osos wastewater project, and directing staff to proceed with the due diligence review as required by Assembly Bill 2701. Moving to the project update very quickly, we are continuing work on initiating the project's EIR. We have a scoping meeting tonight at the South Bay Community Center at 7 o'clock. That will be an open house format. I and members of my staff will be there and available to answer questions about scoping and the EIR process in general. For those not able to make the meeting or who don't want to come out in the rain, scoping comments can be sent via email. The address is on the website, or by direct mail to me, Mark Hutchinson, County Government Center, San Luis Obispo, California, 93408. With that, I'll turn it over to John Waddell, who has an update on the activities of the Technical Advisory Committee.
Mr. Hutchinson, just because some people listen when they're traveling or doing different things, would you also now give them just a little more lead time to know that they can write down that name and address and who to send to if they want to send you something in the mail so they catch it the second time?
Certainly. Mark Hutchinson, County Government Center, San Luis Obispo, California, 93408.
Is there a room number?
Room number is not necessary.
Thank you.
I'm John Waddell, also with the Public Works Department. I just need to quickly remind the public that we have a vacancy on the Technical Advisory Committee, and we are currently accepting applications. Applications are due by January 4th. If anyone has questions or would like to get an application, they can contact me, John Waddell, at the Public Works Department. Phone number 781-5252. Also, the next TAC meeting is tentatively scheduled for Monday, January 7th at noon here in this building down the hall in room 161. So, again, the phone number regarding TAC applications, 781-5252. You can also get an application at the Los Osos CSD office.
That concludes staff's presentation for this afternoon.
That concludes our update.
See no lights on. We'll move on to the public. First request to speak is Piper Riley, followed by Ben DiFatta.
Good afternoon. Piper Riley, Los Osos. I became vocal in this when I received a notice of violation in one hand and a 218 in the other. I've spoken before you before, and I think I'm of reasonable intelligence, but after reading the 218, I was really left dumbfounded. It reminded me of a scene from a TV ad for Shrek 3 where Pinocchio is talking in circles trying not to answer a question. The 218 ballot made me feel the same way, so I looked at the notice of violation, tried to figure out what to do with that. To stop discharging, I thought I could get a composting toilet and I could use my gray water for my garden, but the county doesn't like that idea. I started watching CSD meetings, and another citizen spoke up that he went to the county and asked, what can I do? And the county said that they did not have an answer. Basically, we needed to vote yes and see what happens. I remember that an acquaintance of mine works for a company in Morro Bay who make water treatment plants for their mansions down in Malibu, and I thought to myself, wouldn't it be great if they made this on a smaller scale for residences? The next time I watched a CSD meeting, Tom Murphy came before the CSD and spoke about his reclamator. Unfortunately, it doesn't sound like the county really likes his idea either, which I don't really understand because, as I've mentioned before, Orange County basically runs on a giant reclamator. On the 9th of this month, there was a forum entitled Where's the Water? And it also mentioned the effectiveness of the Orange County system. And it stated that it's not wastewater until you waste it. The meeting, which Supervisor Patterson attended, was highly informative and really focused on conservation and reclamation. In a nutshell, they stated that desalination is not very environmentally friendly and that we need to realize that water waste and land use are intrinsically connected and that you cannot effectively deal with one without looking at all of them and that communities need to work together in order to be successful. Last week, the CSD and LOCAC had a joint meeting regarding water conservation. It really wasn't what I thought it was going to be. I was so excited. I thought that here was going to be a meeting where we might be able to do something constructive, and instead it turned out to be nothing more really than a giant loophole for large contractors to be able to build even more. We're at level 3 severity right now, and if nothing is really truly constructively going to be done to solve our water problem, then there should be an immediate building moratorium. Los Osos has water, and we deserve to keep it, and there are answers out there for our problems. They're logical answers, and they seem to be falling on deaf ears. And there's an old adage that in the absence of logic and reason, greed is usually a motivating factor. I watched A Christmas Carol the other day, and it really reminded me of what is going on here. You're writing the story, and it's up to you on how it will end. Please be the heroes.
Mr. Riley, unfortunately, your time is up, but thank you for your comments.
Okay.
Ben DiMatta, followed by Bruce
Merry
Payne.
Christmas. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to you all.
Supervisors, Ben DiMatta here. Happy holidays to you next week. Before the 218 vote, people were deceived, and the path that they're taking now, Gibson and Algren are shooting for our $125 a month sewer fees, plus another $1,500 sewer yearly assessment tax on your tax bill. People didn't understand that. These two total $3,000 a year, and some say more. This takes a big chunk of money from the homeowner's budget. This expensive energy hog stinking sewer plant that Gibson or Algren, Pavo, Water Board want, no matter where it's located, is very unaffordable and criminal of you to force it on us. Again, this board is supposed to protect us, not throw 3,000 homeowners out of their homes. Your supervisors usually follow along and vote the way the supervisor whose zone the project is in, and usually vote his way. But in this case, we ask you to use your own common sense for this very important decision. The solution is easy for me now that I know more about the reclamator. The reclamator is the solution to our problem. Consider what the astronauts up in space are drinking. This technology has been around for 30 years and improved over the years. Look at what the AES Corporation has to offer. Study it and act on it and get it implemented. Stop wasting the taxpayers' money. Stop the water board from this sadistic abuse with many mental, physical, and financial hardships to our citizens. Fire brings in the selfish, merry men who steal from the poor and give to the rich. We know that they want to make Los Angeles an example so they can have an unlimited statewide enforcement tool to punish other homeowners, no matter where they live in the state. The Water Quality Board was formed to go after companies, not individuals. In Los Angeles, they have not proved which homes are polluting the bay. They just jumped in and just made everybody in one fell swoop guilty. This is a violation of people's inalienable rights to live in peace, not in fear of government sadistic abuse, which only causes our citizens to revolt against this local government. Remember when OSHA first started up, they had unlimited powers, and it took Congress 2 years to limit their powers. With the state and county having a shortfall in revenue next year, the state will short the funds normally given to the counties. Counties will raise fees, lay off employees, and will again cause many financial hardships to its citizens. Supervisors, your job is to protect us, not throw 3,000 homeowners out of their homes.
Mr. Fata, thank you for your comments. Bruce Payne, followed by Don Bearden.
Good afternoon, Chairman, Board, people here and at home. I'm Bruce Payne, resident of Los Osos. I think this issue number three here, or number C, it is a little early, like about 30 days. But it's illegal, an illegal election anyway. So at December 7th, the Regional Water Quality Control Board meeting, Chairman Young said they were not vacating the CDOs and CAOs because they wanted to keep the pressure up in case the county chose to continue the Tri-W project. Well, I've said many times before, and I'll paraphrase it real fast again, ever since the signatures for the recall election were certified, everything the bureaucracy has done, including you, has been to force us to do that Tri-W project, and we're not going to do it. I think you're 30 days early seeking to destroy the evidence of the CDO, of the protest letters. However, if they're destroyed, I'm sure there's a whole bunch of people who have been forced to say yes out of fear will be coming forward to stop it anyway. On a letter from an attorney disputing this, the one thing is number three in an article about the third page says a proposed system is not the most cost-effective way to achieve the goal of lower or zero wastewater emissions. Competing systems with costs tens of millions of dollars less below the system proposed in this assessment are available and in violation of the rights of property owners in the assessment district to not pursue the most cost-effective system available. You've been told, and Ben DeFata just reminded you again, that the reclamator is the cheapest, most effective way to solve the problem. It also keeps in place recharge of the aquifer with no danger of liquefaction, with 100% of what's being recharged now, and that's none of your projects on the board that the Tech Committee evaluated have anywhere near that. 400,000 gallons is the best they could come up with to recharge the aquifer. And by the way, I saw Mr. Peterson at the Sierra Club meeting the other day. I liked your shirt. I used to wear a Pendleton, looked just like that. I didn't recognize you at first in the shirt. Glad you're in for saving our water. It's the most expensive asset we've
Thank
got.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker is Don Bearden, followed by David Dugan.
Don Bearden, I don't think the reclamator is a solution to all of our problems. If a reclamator people will submit their data to the Water Quality Control Board, I think they'll find that it does not meet the design criteria necessary to solve our problems. I urge the board here to adopt a resolution overruling all protests submitted prior to and at the public hearing on October 23rd, 2007, and to approve the engineer's report as amended, levy the assessments, and direct a due diligence review of the wastewater project as directed by AB 2701. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. David Dugan, followed by Maria Kelly.
David Lososos, I appreciate that this board is going to be sending a letter to the original board stating their, satisfaction, whatever they're going to be stating towards the regional board on not having the CDO rescinding hearings. There was no promise that they were going to rescind. Well, let me remind you of something. This last meeting, they stated that they didn't know anything about the lawsuits when they made that decision to have that meeting. On the contrary, July 6th, Watsonville, after an extensive discussion on whether or not what was in abeyance, whether or not they were going to rescind, and of course they decided not to have a hearing on that. On their closed session docket, to show up for the first time, PISLDIF versus the Regional Water Quality Control Board, July 6th. They knew about the lawsuit when they determined by unanimous consensus on September 7th to have hearings for the consideration of rescinding the CDOs. They knew prior to that. They knew during, prior to that, because many of us went to those meetings before September 7th and made statements that this is in the courts. I did. Several of us did, too. September 7th, I and others said this is in the courts. Their own prosecution team got up there and said this is under litigation on September 7th. And yet they decided unanimously to have those hearings. And what changed their minds in October? What changed their minds? Maybe it was this. Well, in the discussion on September 7th about the 218 vote, Pablo Obrin said, well, the hearing they're going to have on the 218, if a person decides to change their vote because of something they hear, they can do so as long as they do it before the end of the hearing. Well, a little light goes on in Jeffrey Young's head, and when he got the chance, he said, instead of using vinegar, he's going to use a little honey. And he says, all right, let's consider rescinding the CDOs, and let's go ahead and agendize hearings. So people will think that those hearings are going to take place, are going to vote yes on the 218. There's another form of electioneering. Phil was very stealthy. It's honey instead of vinegar, and it worked well. I don't know how well it worked, but it did. But just consider this. They did know, prior to asking their staff to agendize it, that there was a lawsuit, that it was in the courts, and to tell us on December 7th that they didn't know that is an outright lie. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Maria Kelly, followed by Lisa Schicker.
Maria Kelly, Los Osos. I'm here to support the board's resolution and staff recommendations. It feels like to me from reading the history of Los Osos, we're playing a volleyball game and we're back to first server. We've rotated around through six servers and we're back to the best service. And so, again, I support the county. Obviously, 80% of the Los Osos community supports the county's ability to follow through on this project. Thereby, we need to pass this assessment and accept the board's resolution. So I'm here as a community member supporting your ongoing efforts and appreciate your continued efforts. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Lisa Schicker, followed by Lindy Owen.
Thank you. My name is Lisa Schicker, Los Osos CSD and Baywood Park resident. I have five things to share with you this morning. First, I'd like to thank Supervisor Patterson Shajian and Mr. Gibson, Supervisor Gibson, for being willing to design and...
Ms. Schicker, if I may, people in the back room are going like this, so could you move closer to the microphone and speak more loudly, please? Yes.
I know.
I'll give you a few inches. Just feel like you're talking to us, and it'll...
Okay. The flu got me good big time.
I understand.
Man.
I just want to make sure everybody, not only here, but those that are listening and watching on television, it's very difficult if you don't...
Yeah, it just is a bunch of mumble.
Not yelling.
Okay.
We'll start you over.
Thank you. Once again, thanks to the supervisors, Patterson, Ashaji, and Gibson, for your willingness to write a resolution to the Water Board. I think that would maybe hopefully get their attention. I've witnessed the waste of time and energy on treating citizens unfairly in Los Osos, and we really like to get that behind us so we can keep going with the project. So thank you for doing that. I look forward to it. I'd like to know the status of it. I have two questions this morning, or this afternoon. One has to do with the assessment. I see this 80%, 20%. Maybe this is for Mr. Miller. How many people didn't vote, and what was the total amount of the assessment? It's the 80, 20% of the people who did vote that gives us those statistics. But how many people didn't vote, and then what are the percentages based on that? I'd like to know that number. I didn't see my comments addressed in the letter that was written about why the protests were being rejected. So I'd like to know where my comments were addressed because I don't see it. And then the final questions have to do with Mr. Hutchinson's report about the tonight's scoping meeting, which I'm really looking forward to. But I noticed that the NOP, which is the formal document that's filed with the state, is missing some history that's very important. And I know I wrote you all about it, and I know I wrote a letter to Mr. Hutchinson, too, so it may be an oversight, but it's an important one, and I'd like to bring it to your attention again. The Los Osos CSD Board of Directors rescinded the 2001 Statement of Overriding Considerations on the EIR. As our EIR stands today, the best project is out-of-town step steg. And that piece of history is not included in your summary, Mr. Hutchinson, and it's not included in the documents that are in your booklets. So I have another copy for you today and a copy of my editorial that was printed in the Sun Bulletin that describes why the downtown Tri-W site should not be considered further or if it is evaluated. I want these things in the record to make sure that all of these things are formally accepted and adopted. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. If you can submit that to the clerk. Lindy Owen, followed by Chris Albee.
Good afternoon. Lindy Owen from Los Osos. I would like to just add on to what Lisa talked about was the fact that the Tri-W site will never, it is pretty much dead. It just will never work. It's not going to make it on any level. It's been booted out of prior EIRs and some mystery got it back in. But I don't think that I do not want to see our taxpayer dollars and our energy and our time spent on looking at dead technology. When you look at global warming and the new elements that are going to be affecting how we design in the future, it's time to actually start looking at what is possible. And I was very inspired by, before I came down here, I got to see some of the Where's the Water workshop that went on last Monday night, I think. Anyway, it was excellent, and it's talking about innovation. It's not talking about the Tri-W site. It's not talking about old gravity sewers that break down. They're the most energy consumptive. The highest energy user out of any municipality is a sewer plant. So when energy is a problem now, we don't go back and design sewer plants like we used to. We need to go forward. And that's what my fear has been, is that this process is being driven by a state loan that failed, and it's not should not affect our project. We should not be having to build a project so that we can pay the state loan back. And that's bottom line. I think we just need to stop studying the conventional gravity sewers and start looking at all the on-site technology that's available. On-site is a method of wastewater treatment, and it was recommended by the EPA in 1995 when Jim Kreisel came to town, and they looked around and they said a conventional gravity sewer doesn't belong in this town. Why did we get stuck and go back, and why do we continue trying to put a conventional gravity sewer in Los Osos? Can we not be innovative? Can we not use the next $3 million to do something new, think out of the box, and come up with something that really addresses our water problem? And that's what I'm going to be speaking tonight about, and I'll probably never stop speaking about asking for fiscal responsibility with my future and the community of Los Osos and all of California. Thank you. And Merry Christmas to everybody.
Merry Christmas to you, too. Thank you for your comments. Chris Albee, followed by Richard Markison.
Chris Albee, CDO number 1019. Before my time starts, on item F here, are you going to be allowed public comment on item C, or can we comment on it now?
It's your 3 minutes to do whatever you want to.
Okay, I can't comment on it now. Okay, fine. Okay. Okay, item F1C in your agenda states the board is considering adopting a resolution overruling all protests submitted prior to and at the public hearing on October 23rd, 2007, and approve the engineer's report as amended, levy assessments, and direct due diligence review of the wastewater project. I read that to mean that every written or spoken protest on this issue going back to forever is just going in the trash can, or what are they talking about here? At the last water board meeting, Chairman Young gave us a reason for not rescinding the CDOs. The fact that if the Tri-W project came up as the best one to use, that us nasty people would file a lawsuit against that happening. Now, the attitude's a little hard to understand. We didn't get in line here. We don't like filing lawsuits, and we sure don't like the expense. But when you have water board members, Mr. Shalcroft, for instance, has told us in the past that we could have fixed it ourselves. And we did so. You see the 1994 nitrate report that kind of answered all the questions concerning nitrates in a wastewater project. Now they don't seem to be getting the nitrates too much. And it seems to be seawater intrusion is the new bugbear now. The nitrates can pretty much be taken care of at the wellhead, and the water purveyors are doing that right now as we speak. We're basically defending ourselves against the actions of our own public officials, and bottom line is we're just scared, don't know what else to do. I'm working on the assumption that my house, I'm going to lose the use of my house, and then we'll take it from there. That's all I've got.
Thank you for your comments. The last request to speak is Richard Markinson. Anybody else request to fill out a slip, please do so. Mr. Markinson.
The time. Sorry.
We'll start when you start.
Richard Markinson. The engineer's report, I know you have to pass it. I still have some theory questions on it, but it wouldn't have made a difference in the election. Mr. Gibson mentioned last week that he was going to miss office hours because he and Pablo, I think it was Pablo, had to a meeting in Sacramento. If we could hear if it was a productive meeting or if anything came from that. I'd also like to thank the board for its resolve to write a letter to the water board on behalf of the community and the CDO holders. I'm interested to see the end results of that. And then my last comment deals with the meeting in Los Osos on the two ordinances that are going to be coming before you on January 15th. There was a comment when a question was made about these ordinances are projected in best case scenario to save approximately 22 acre feet. And it was brought up that the fine screening report talks about the project having a water conservation element that will save approximately 160 acre feet. And if the maker of the two ordinances had taken into account the effect of what's in the fine screening report on these ordinances, how soon these ordinances would become moot. And basically we were told that they really didn't know what was coming out of the project's water conservation program. And I think that's two bodies in this county that need to get together. So there's not a duplication of effort, and it's all going in the right direction. If that could be addressed, we were very surprised that they weren't working in conjunction on this. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. That was our last request to speak. Seeing no one step forward, we'll close public comment, bring it back to the board. Supervisor Gibson, did you want to start off, or should we start off with Mr. Hudson or Waddell?
Staff to respond to anything they thought needed comment. Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mark Hutchinson. Again, there were a few comments that we have some responses for. Regarding a question about the total assessment, your staff report does list the amount of the assessment that was actually voted. There was about a 70% turnout, so that addressed about $95 million worth of the assessment. The total is about $127 million. With a 70% turnout, I think the calculation is that everyone who did not vote voted no, the assessment would have passed by about 56%. We had about 8,400 ballots. About 6,000 of those were returned. There was a comment that a person's comment letter was not addressed. We note in the staff report that we did provide specific comments to one letter from the attorney's office. The other comments were grouped into general headings. Those are addressed and responded to under those general headings, also in your staff report or the attachment to your resolution. Regarding the actions of the Los Osos CSD, it's important to note that, and I have had some comments from various CEQA practitioners around the county and around the state about the situation, and I would remind those folks, minor point, the county is in the role now of lead agency under CEQA. So we are obligated to produce a document that reflects the independent judgment of this board. So although all other documents that are produced out there contain valuable information, it is this upcoming EIR on which the board must make their final decision. There's questions about the range of alternatives that we have to evaluate. The CEQA language in that area says that we're required to evaluate a reasonable range of alternatives. It doesn't say we have to evaluate all alternatives. Doesn't say any other guidance on what sort of alternatives need to be in there. That is up to the judgment of the agency in order to accommodate the requirements of CEQA. I would remind everyone that CEQA is first and foremost an informational document. So the purpose behind it is to provide the public and decision makers with information about the environmental effects of a project. When we look at alternatives, we need to be aware that there is a tremendous amount of information out there about at least three different sites that were the subject of previous EIRs, and depending on how you count them, there are at least 22 different locations that have been assessed in one way or another for a treatment plant. Regarding the, and I'll call it the Midtown site in deference to the previous owners, we'll have to play that one and see how that goes. Regarding the Midtown site, there is a lot of information out there about that site. It would seem that we would be remiss if we analyzed various alternative sites and did not in some way compare them to the last site and the one with the most information. We also have to be aware that wherever a treatment plant ends up, the neighbors of that site will want to know why it didn't go in another location. So it's important to provide that information, at least to the neighborhood that will be accommodating a wastewater treatment plant site. All that being said, it's also important to note that the appropriate forum for considering, comparing, and rejecting or selecting alternatives is, in fact, the EIR with its public process and documentation requirements. I've seen comments in various locations that the county has already rejected certain sites via the fine screening report. I would urge folks to read the introduction to that report and understand that it had a specific use. It is not a substitute for an EIR. They should not be surprised to see sites that weren't in the fine screening report show up again in the EIR, at least at the first tier level as we work through treatment plant locations. So the correct forum to consider alternatives is the EIR. We can fully document the reasons why something passes a screen and why it does not, and the public has the opportunity to review that and provide their comments on it.
Mr. Waddell, do you want to add anything?
I'm not at this time. I think Mark pretty much summed it up.
Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And seeing no other colleagues ready for comments, I'd report briefly on the meeting that Mr. Ogren and I attended in Sacramento last Thursday. Was with staff of both the Department of Water Resources and the State Water Resources Control Board, speaking to them about our state of our process, reporting on past accomplishments and future plans, strategies, policies. The focus of those meetings were the second round of the Proposition 218 funding, where we have a request for $10 million in, and there is nothing really specific to report. This is part of our ongoing outreach that we think puts us in the best position to be as competitive as possible for a significant chunk of funds that we are specifically trying to target to those within the community who are in need of financial help. So the applications for that second round are due later in January, and we expect to be in contact with staff as necessary and other elected elected officials and also federal agencies. Just a brief announcement that the next office hours will be in January. We'll not be having one later in December, so the next office hours, 4 o'clock. Sea Pines Golf Course on Thursday, the 10th of January. And with that, I'll move staff's recommendation on the action item.
Second.
Motion by Supervisor Gibson, seconded by Supervisor Patterson. Roll call, please.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye. Madam Clerk, would you introduce the next item, please?
Next item is item G1. This is a presentation of the fiscal and operational status of the Sheriff's Forensic Lab in achieving state performance measures.
I see Chief Bassey stepping forward. Chief, are you going to sit up here at the desk, or do you want to just wait until call them on for a podium, or what are you most comfortable at?
Podium's fine, sir. Is that all right with you?
Deputy. Chief Deputy.
And for those in here, if you introduce yourself to Supervisor Owen, inform me you have been Chief Deputy for several months now.
Wait, yes, sir.
Said Chief, I didn't hear Deputy.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Good afternoon, Chairman Linthal, members of the board, staff, member of the public, Martin Basti, Chief Deputy, Sheriff's Department. At your request of the board, we're here this afternoon, an update on our forensic lab operation and financial report. If you recall, about 6 months ago, the board asked us to come back because we had originally proposed this program as being cost neutral to the county, and we have not achieved that yet. The project was originally funded for the year 2006-2007 with a startup in July 2006. And we've detailed the operation since that time over the last 18 months in a letter that was sent to the board on the 11th, which should be in your package and you can refer to. Unfortunately, as we got started, there was some unanticipated delays in getting the project started. First of all, getting the necessary equipment, delay in getting the lab penalty assessment in place, outside agencies, getting them on board, and of course it took longer than anticipated for the validation and correlation studies which are necessary to validate the samples. However, the progress we've made towards being cost neutral this year, we're closer than we were last year. And if I may, just a couple of minutes of some historical timeline of how the project took off. It was approved for July 06. We were able to fund the equipment in October of 06. We had the equipment on site with a three-month delay in February of 07, and then we were able to start the validation and correlation studies. Now, previously, urine analysis were sent out of town, as well as samples were sent of the substances to DOJ. They did a presumptive, and then if it was required for court, then the DA would have to subpoena, and of course, some of those had a timeline of 21 to 45 days. That was the initial proposal in getting the project here at our lab, is to have a 3 to 5 day turnaround and to have a quality of service to the community and to the local agencies. In addition, we sought clients from the local agencies to bring it local, and as of to date, we have the Paso Robles Police Department, Atascadero Police Department, Pismo Beach Police Department, Arroyo Grande Police Department, Grover Beach Police Department, Morro Bay Police Department, CMC, CHP, and of course our own. and in starting in January 1st, probation will be on board. To make it cost neutral, we need to have the outside clients to use our lab services to help support the project. And as you can see by the reports, we gave you three charts. At the end of fiscal year 06-07, we had a deficit of $104,000, which was primarily the salaries and the startup costs. As of November 30th, 2007, we're about $23,000 short. One of the primary kickers, and of course in our current county budget situation, is Drug and Alcohol Services also uses the analysis. They are currently using an outside lab at a cost of about $80,000. Our lab can do it for approximately half. Now, we were in negotiations, however, because this was coming before the board and because there was some uncertainty of the longevity of the project, those were on hold. However, if Drug and Alcohol Services come on board, this year will be cost neutral, and Drug and Alcohol Services will also save the county money because we're doing county projects for county departments in the county. So, in addition to those, we have the court testimony, which was an expense from an outside lab. If it had to go to court, we had to pay for that expert testimony. The testimony is available because we have the staff, and her time is already covered. The timeliness of the process, and also, you know, it's 3 to 5 days. We can also speed it up, or we can do special projects, or we can be called in on weekends. And starting in January 1st, we're also going to be start doing the non-DUI coroner's samples as well, which we currently have to send out of county. Additionally, it allows us to have a closer chain of custody. You send to these larger labs and have thousands of samples, the possibility and the rate of increase of possibly having error or something being lost goes up. But again, getting back to Drug and Alcohol Services, the uncertainty of how the project was going to continue, and that's what we're here for today, is to encourage that continue, because with Drug and Alcohol on board, we can bring the samples and keep them in-house. Additionally, to all the folks, the value of service, and we alluded to a couple of cases in there. One was a child death, and another was a significant case for the Highway Patrol on some substance. Doing it in-house is certainly an advantage. We are closer to our goal of becoming revenue neutral, and throughout the life of the project, obviously, when you start something new, some of these unanticipated things were not foreseen and were not addressed prior. However, once we have addressed these, we've taken diligent steps to correct them. We've secured almost every agency in the county to use our facility, and we're getting closer and closer. So with that, we ask you that we can continue the project and make it a viable a supportive lab that we can use here in the county for our citizens. With that is our overview, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Yeah. Chief Basti, one of the things you talked about is adding Drug and Alcohol Services on board, and I'm aware there's a confidentiality issue that may be something that obviously we can deal with as far as numbers or anonymity on
yes.
samples. But what about the timeline? Isn't there a timeline that, I mean, we just can't make this decision to say Drug and Alcohol comes on board January 1st because of some logistics and things like that? And if that's the case, and that's what I've been told, what is your timeline, I think, because it may take 2 or 3 months to do this, and how is that going to affect our overall bottom line of being $23,000 in the red, basically?
Okay. And again, our first year, we only realized about 2 months' worth of revenue coming in. The uncertainty, we were already in negotiations, we already addressed the issue of the confidentiality. All that it would take is them to come on board, we could have it done by either February or March. You still have the last 4 months, which is pretty close to our offset depending on the number of samples they have. But the only stumbling block is the uncertainty of keeping the project going. They weren't willing to release their contract from the outside lab and come over to us until we can say we're going to be here and get some legs on the project.
Well, I understand that, and maybe the contract says that they have to abide by or complete that contract at a certain time period. But I'm curious, about how much a month do you think that would generate for revenue for this particular program from Drug and Alcohol Services?
Well, you're looking, depending on the number of samples, they're currently spending $80,000 a year. So if you divide that
by 12?
Yeah.
Thank you.
And obviously, I think the projection was around $3,600 a month that was added to our project.
Okay. Thank you. Supervisor Patterson?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chief Bathia, just to get some clarification on some points, the 3 to 5 day turnaround period that you spoke of in your staff report mentioned here this afternoon, that's actually a reality. That is what's happening.
Yes, sir.
With that. Okay. And then I see these things as advantages, basically, of doing it the way that it has been set up here as opposed to sending the samples out. One would be you mentioned if you sent samples out and then you had a court proceeding, you'd have to bring in an expert to testify relative to those samples. Does that not have to happen when you use the forensic lab at the Sheriff's Department, or are you your own experts?
Well, we are our own experts, and then the technologist will be called in to testify. Currently, like a substance gets sent to DOJ, and it gets presumptive, and then we say it is illegal substance. Then it waits for the subpoena from the DA's office. They do the qualitative and quantitative analysis. Then if it goes to court, they call up that analyst from Goleta to schedule him here in court to testify as to what he found. Our turnaround, we will keep those records. Then they will call our office, and she has a five-minute drive to testify in court. And there's no additional cost to the DA, and there's no additional cost because she's already the salary's already covered in the project.
Okay. And then also you said you maintain a closer chain of custody, which makes sense as well. If you do have other people utilizing the lab, then your projections, it looks like, are going to come out favorably, and you may not only be cost neutral, you could raise revenue.
Yes.
Okay. And my final comment, the administrative office reviewed your staff report, and they identified a potential another source to make up the difference in funding, and that was the asset forfeiture funds that the Sheriff's Department has access to. Is that a possibility of using that rather than the general fund to cover any shortfall?
Certainly there are some funding sources available as long as there was no restrictions on subplanning, restrictions on those funds. And certainly I can, at the direction of your board, take it back to Sheriff Hedges, and we could possibly do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Chief Bassey, one additional question. I don't recall. Did you mention the city of San Luis Obispo, the police department, as being one of those that's using the service?
They're not using the service currently. We have attempted to get them out to the lab, run them through the lab, and, of course, with trying to get that coordinated with Chief Linden and get her out, that I'm sure we can. They're the only ones that are not participating.
So would it be safe to say or accurate to say that that also is a potential source of income in the future once we can get them on board? I know they do a lot of testing.
Oh, yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you. Supervisor Gibson?
So basically you need a marketing department for this.
Well, that would be me.
Yeah, right.
Marketing party.
I know you do a good job. I note that what's before us today is to consider this report and provide direction to you. And significantly, you're not asking for a budget adjustment at this point to take general fund money to support this. And I have very much the same question that Supervisor Patterson had, plus a couple of other more detailed ones about the numbers here. And it's, you know, yes, it's not a huge amount of money, but on the other hand, I think we really do have to look carefully as we're heading into our challenges of the year ahead. So I guess one of my questions is, do you have some statistics at some point, if you were to come back with us, that shows what kinds of samples you're doing and what your costs of doing those tests are? And the reason I look at that is there's a footnote on your page 6 here that you're looking at cost savings from the HS 11550 cases where you'd be spending $63 per test outside, but I didn't see anywhere where it was listed as to what you were doing it, you know, what your cost was, so we could get a sense of, you know, exactly how that operation is working. And in terms of coming back with information, that sort of analysis I think would be really helpful.
Yes, and primarily, like I talked before, is the validation and correlation studies. It takes about 12 to 20 samples of each individual drug to validate and to correlate those. And the way that process occurs is they take part of the sample and test it and come up with a result and then send it to an outside lab and get a verification result. So once you get those. So we will have the numbers of how many samples. But overall, the budget basically is fixed and it's primary salary for the technologist.
Right.
The test itself with the chemicals and the equipment was already paid for out of a grant is pennies for each sample. So whether you do one or 100, but certainly we can take, if we do 153 for the year, we can divide it out over a total cost and give you an average amount.
Yeah.
We do have a billable amount for the outside agencies. This is what we're charging.
Okay.
But for our in-house and our current samples, they're pennies because our overhead cost is already covered. That's why we showed in there that we have the cost savings.
So if we can spread the salary cost in some reasonable way, and you're charged to the outside agency, that leads me to the Drug and Alcohol Services has $80,000 a year they're spending, but I heard you in promoting your service were maybe going to cut them a deal that they could be had it at less. So in terms of the revenue into this program would be somewhat less than $80,000.
And certainly that's what we're talking about is the difference between $40 a sample and $63 a sample.
Right. And then it's a small detail, but in looking at your analysis here, you're showing the costs, and this again on page 6, you also show cost avoidance of the $9,600 and some. Is that a budgeted item for you right now? I mean, I guess I didn't quite see how cost avoidance being taken away from your cost worked. But
okay, because we were to pay an outside lab, it would cost us X amount of dollars to go to the outside lab to do those tests.
But do you have a budget item of that $9,000 or somewhere?
No.
Okay.
No, it's included in the project. And again, the savings, again, most of it, I mean, is a fixed cost for the project because most of it is the salaries. So once you get the fixed cost absorbed into your actual cost per test, and since we've shown our total expenses of the project, then we're counting the savings that we would normally be spending from an outside service into our current existing paid for funds.
Okay. All right.
Does that make sense?
In other words,
we would have to budget X amount of dollars like we do with the coroners for $178 a sample to the CTV lab.
Right.
If we bring them in-house, then we credit those savings back because we're already paid for the salary, the equipment, and there's only minor costs with the chemicals.
Okay. Well, that'd be one I'd probably better to sit down and look at it. And at this point, in detail, I guess where I'm sort of heading with this is the idea that you're not asking for budget adjustment now. I feel strongly that the range of options for making up whatever shortfall you have this year should come out of funds other than general fund support, given, you know, my growing understanding that there are other accounts which can pay for this, such as asset forfeiture, although that has been tapped for another project a couple weeks ago. Well, and that's the question. And you know, if in coming back we could line out what other accounts are available, how much is in them, and how you would propose to do this without general fund support, I think that would be important. And the last question would be to come back with some clearer sense of where Drug and Alcohol Services is in terms of using this facility. I mean, I'm not quite certain where you are. I mean, if you
hang-up is the uncertainty based upon the rumor of this hearing of whether or not the program had strong enough legs to stand and that they could come over to us and then continue.
Okay.
So if we can get your assurance that you're going to support the program and we can continue, then that will relieve their concern and we can continue getting the finite details and get them on board. Because it's going to save. It's going to be a win-win for the lab. It's going to make them whole. And on the other side, it's going to save the county some money from services they're paying for an outside that we could do here and do it ourselves.
Okay. And so then, just my last one, it would be useful then to have a similar projection for 07-08 with them and 08-09
yes.
with them in terms of deciding whether we go forward.
Yes, sir.
Vince, before we go there, Chief Bassey, I always get either a call or email. Please don't use acronyms and everything else. So people understand the 11550, the under the influence, what that means when you're doing tests, because I'm sure people don't have a clear idea, and I'm going to get a phone call or something saying, what did that mean? Don't use sections. Why are you testing? And can you just do a sentence or two on that to explain to the public or the listening what that's all about?
Certainly. The 11550 is under the influence of a controlled substance, and a urine analysis is conducted on the individual. That substance is tested. If it comes back positive for the drug that falls under the violations of 11550 health and safety, it's prosecutable. Any advantage to us having our own lab do it is the quick turnaround. And somebody doesn't have to sit and wait. If they get arrested and it comes back as a clear test and there's not a probation violation, there's not an arrest, they have it much more than waiting 25 or 45 days and then proceeding with prosecution. So all it does is in your analysis, just like with alcohol or whatever is in the urine, to prove that the person is under the influence and violation of the law.
And if I may, if the system works correctly, it should reduce the time that some of these people stay in jail. Not the penalty phase, but while they're waiting for an analysis to be done.
Yes.
During capacity issues and things of that nature. Mr. Ricci, I think you had your light on for the acting CAO today.
Yeah. Vince Maricci with the County Administrative Office. A couple of points that I'd like to make. One is that the potential savings from drug and alcohol may not be as significant as was mentioned. We have figures that indicate that drug and alcohol currently spends about $45,000 to perhaps $50,000 a year on drug tests. Secondly, I was involved with the negotiations and discussions with the formation of the lab, and the critical component throughout all of those discussions was that the lab would remain cost neutral. We knew that there would be some startup costs, and part of the understanding that we had was that those startup costs would be covered with outside funding. And that remains the position of our office, is that if the lab can fund itself and utilize those revenues, we're totally in favor of that. That's our understanding. But if those revenues do fall short, we suggest that the difference between the expense and the ability to offset the cost be made up by other funds other than the general fund.
Thank you. Supervisor Rowland?
Yeah, I just, one thing I didn't see in here, replacement, capital replacement cost. Have you calculated that then in your projections?
For the equipment?
Yeah.
No, because the equipment was bought out of grant funding.
Well, I know it's new, but
yes,
you know, if this thing's going to continue to go on a long-term basis, very much like we did with CalID, is we begin to set up an account for a replacement. And I just want to make
sure. We will look at those options, et cetera, with the centrifuge, the gas chromometer, et cetera. Yes, yes, those are going to have to be built in. But their life expectancy is my understanding, is in the 7 to 10 year range. So we do have some time to outfit and continue that equipment going.
Okay. The other thing I was just going to say, that I don't see the need to bring back a lot of information. It's if we want this thing to continue, say so, and that you find the funding within the department to take care of that. And I think that's the short term that we have to do.
Just one point of clarification, though, is the Drug and Alcohol Services is budgeted for about $45,000, but if you look at SAP and on their actual revenue expenditures is where we pulled our figure. So budget versus actual, there's a difference. We do want this program to continue. We want to serve the community. We want to serve the entire community, including the police departments. We can make it, and obviously when we first proposed the project, we didn't foresee some of these stumbling issues and shortfalls, and certainly I can take back whatever direction to Sheriff Edges, and as long as the board agrees that this is a viable project, we need it to continue, we'll make it work.
Supervisor Rowe, was that in the form of a motion, or do you want to restate that, sir?
Well, I think you have public comment first, and then we can make a motion.
I've received no request to speak, so we'll open and close public comment, see no one step forward, and come back to the board.
My motion would be to continue this. Do we want a date certain, like another year for reevaluation? The whole thing was based on. I mean, I can make the motion.
We'll get some motion.
Have it on budget hearing.
Yeah, I was going to say, Mr. Chairman, it'll fall naturally into the budget discussion.
Okay. So anyway, to continue the operation and at the revenue deficit be made up within the sheriff's budget.
I'll second.
Motion by Supervisor Ovett, second by Supervisor Patterson. Is there any discussion? Supervisor Asajjan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm I don't have a comfort zone to say to come from the sheriff's budget, but where is it going and how is it going to impact the existing budget? Am I going to see one less officer in Nipomo?
No.
I don't want to see that happen.
I mean, there are things like assets forfeiture. There's other areas where I think $26,000 can be found in a multi-million dollar budget that would take care of this.
Would that be the case, Chief Massey?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
And it looks like, with everything being considered, it's going to achieve the goal of being revenue neutral in very short order.
Sure. We're getting very, very close.
I have confidence that it's going to get there.
And potentially what happens in the next 6 months, it could be less than that $22,000 or $23,000. Supervisor Gibson, under discussion?
And that was all. I just wanted to confirm that non-general fund revenues would be found to make this up. That's important.
If there's no more discussion, Madam Clerk, a roll call, please.
Mr. Ovett?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Asajjan?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye. With that, we've been here for an hour, and we're going to start at the next item. We're going to take a 10-minute break after lunch here because we worked right through closed session, and we'll see you at 3:10.
Thank you, each of you, for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll come back to order, and for those that are in the audience watching, at least, if you wonder why we're so happy and smiling, it's because our Madam Clerk made banana nut bread, three different types of chocolate, a Christmas tree ornament, everything else, and we're kind of passing the loot around over here. So I don't think we'll suffer from low blood sugar in the afternoon.
God help me.
With that, Madam Clerk, would you introduce the next item? Not necessarily up from your bag here, but what's on the agenda?
Okay. Next item on the agenda is item G2, submittal of a recommendation to transfer animal services from the Sheriff's Department and establish the Department of Animal Services or consider other action as provided by the County Administrator's Office. No recommendation.
Thank you. And Sheriff Hedges, before you start, I want to publicly thank you. I know San Luis PD, the FBI, and everything else, it was what we used to call a home run in the business of law enforcement last week. Congratulations on the arrest of those bank robbers.
Well, thank you very much. I know a lot of time and effort was put into that over a period of time, and my folks very much appreciate that.
Thank you. With that, sir, start your presentation.
Thank you. Pat Hedges, Sheriff Coroner. I have a brief statement that, as noted in both my board letter and the accompanying letter from the administrative office, administrative oversight for animal services was transferred to the sheriff's office in November of 1997. The reasons for that organizational change were to improve the coordination with local humane organizations and rescue groups and to implement efforts to reduce the high euthanasia rate, which was extremely high at that particular time. The issues at that time included the inconsistent dealings with various organizations where some groups were given preferential treatment in licensing, inspection, and fees. Of more obvious concern was the fact that Animal Services was killing over 3,000 adoptable animals annually. Organizational and personnel changes were made within Animal Services. An Animal Welfare Alliance was crafted, with Dr. Anderson bringing together many animal groups working towards the common goal of decreasing the euthanasia that we were dealing with. Although the number of animals being euthanized was falling, it would take a collective effort to bring the numbers down dramatically. These strategies and processes led to Animal Services being in the enviable position of not having to euthanize a single adoptable dog or cat for a couple of years. The numbers, even though not currently at zero, remain extremely low for a public shelter. Significant time was invested by myself and my staff to achieve these goals. In addition, the once annual procession before your board by those lobbying for funding for spay-neuter certificates was ended when we successfully included that funding into the Animal Services budget. Euthanized animals that were at one time turned over to companies to process the remains are now humanely cremated on site. Camp Paws was created by the humane educator to allow kids an opportunity to work with dogs at a week-long camp. This not only helps the children learn important lessons in dealing with pets, but it also makes the dogs much more appealing for adoption. The past and current efforts to improve the environment and the future for animals within the shelter continues to take time and attention for staff within the sheriff's office. While the day-to-day operations are overseen by the manager, the hiring process, including recruitment, backgrounds, and hiring interviews, are conducted by sheriff staff. As noted in the board letter from Leslie Brown, which is before you, the current arrangement allows for the ability to leverage resources within the sheriff's department. Decoded, this means that resources which should be handling the responsibility of the sheriff's department are redirected towards assisting Animal Services. While this arrangement was manageable 10 years ago, it has gradually created an impact on time management for sheriff staff. Increased responsibilities on sheriff staff to deal with law enforcement-related issues does not provide ample time to effectively address every issue that appears at Animal Services. The mandated responsibilities handled by me as sheriff coroner necessarily require the necessary attention by me and my staff. While the Sheriff's Department was very willing to address the issues that existed in 1997, those issues were successfully resolved. It is my recommendation to your board that Animal Services be allowed to proceed as a department. It has maintained its own separate budget and has the staff in place to proceed in that direction. I will note that this is not a new request, and discussion has taken place between myself and admin staff over the past couple of years. As stated in my letter, this is not a mandated function of my office, but I remain committed to assisting in a smooth transition that will be in the best interest of the population of this county, animals and people alike. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Sheriff. I have no lights or questions or comments from you right now, so I'll go to the public. I've received several requests to speak. The first request is Cecilia Hall, followed by Ira Alpert.
If you wanted to hear from us before public comment, Mr. Chairman, we're happy to.
I didn't see your light on, Dr. Edge. I'm sorry.
No,
I didn't
right.
Say anything.
Leslie had a padded.
I didn't see Leslie's light on. I apologize.
Presentation. But you'd asked us. This is probably germane before public comment. You'd asked us to take a look at the way that Animal Service was run in some other counties, and Leslie took a look at that. What are some of the options? And I think she's going to. Has a slide that indicates some of that stuff, Leslie, is that right?
Very brief.
We included in the package, we included a memorandum that Leslie put together that outlined the various options that that we discovered. And very quickly, I don't know if Leslie's going to hit on this, you'll see we got 13 responses, and about half of them are in the Sheriff's Department. And then there's a take your pick of other options. A couple are standalone departments. The Ag Commissioner runs the operation in a couple, the health department in a couple, and one is general services department. And Mr. Hollander's here if you start thinking about planning, just to... Leslie?
Yeah,
probably what it is. It's, you know,
it's public work.
Yeah, Parvo's on his way as you speak. Leslie, will you have a slide? Did you want to...
Okay, so...
Microphone.
Oh, okay. So just briefly, I have about five slides that are give highlights of what I had written in the staff report. Your board had asked us to return with a brief history of where animal services had been in the past in terms of the county organization, some options to consider, and we also decided to survey other counties to find out where their animal services function is located and to gather some additional data. So I was going to run through that very quickly. And as you can see by this slide, originally the Department of Animal Regulation was a department until 1989. I actually did not know when that was originally formed. I had some challenges going back to get some of this information. And then in December of 1989, animal regulation was moved to the health agency. The specific reasons of why that move was made was not well documented, and I wasn't here, so I can't really speak to that. In October of 1997, the board adopted an ordinance to move animal services to the Sheriff's Department as a separate division. We did look at five options, including take no action, contract or assign the entire operation to another department within the county organization, the option of essentially splitting the function with the sheriff retaining the animal control or the patrol function, and then moving the kennel function to either another county department or contract that out with a nonprofit or for-profit business. Or we could contract the entire animal services function out to a nonprofit, humane group, or private business. And finally, creating a freestanding county department as proposed by the sheriff. And as I mentioned, we did survey other counties. We sent the survey out to all 58 through CSAC, and we received 13 responses. And with that, we added our data. Just to get a sense of how we're performing in comparison to those that responded to us. And here are some charts that are a little bit difficult to read. The annual percentage of animals that are released, either through adoption or redemption, or are euthanized. And as you can see, of the respondents to the survey, our euthanasia rate was the lowest at a little bit less than 12%. And Stanislaus is quite high. We also gathered information on budgets and did an analysis of the budget level per the volume of animals coming through the shelter. San Luis Obispo invests quite a bit in their animal services function. We are second only to Placer County, as you can see in this chart, and Yuba County invests the least. And that's it.
Thank you, Leslie. And I apologize again for leaving you out.
That's fine.
It wasn't because of too much candy or blood sugar, I assure you. Supervisor Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Brown, when you showed the actual budgeted amount per animal, were all of the counties offering similar services? I mean, did they all include the field operations as well as the kennel and so forth? So we're looking at apples to apples in the comparison?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Any additional questions from board members to staff? Let me try again here. Now we'll open to the public. See if several requests to speak. You get so used to looking at these lights, and if the light doesn't say somebody wants to speak, you know, you just full speed ahead. Cecilia Hall, followed by Ira Alpert. And for those that haven't been here before, and I see some faces that I haven't seen in quite a while, what you need to do is just be sure to state your name for the record. And if you can just talk like you're talking to us, the little black piece on the podium there is the microphone. And we do get questions and calls because even though you may be able to be heard here, we want to make sure you're heard on those that are listening in the radio or watching on television.
All righty.
And you will have 3 minutes.
Okay, thanks. My name is Cecile Hall. I've been a volunteer with Animal Services for 4 years. I heartily agree that Animal Services needs to go into another department. How that's going to be structured, I don't know. However, the management that is currently there, I feel, should not be able to take this over with an increase of salary. I very much disagree with this. Leslie Brown's euthanasia graph was, all that was terrific. But I feel that there is a difference between euthanasia and killing. Whatever that means, whatever the statistics were that you got, I don't know how they're stating what they do with the animals. If they state it's all euthanasia, okay, it's incorrect. However, my feeling about this right now is that there have been a lot of complaints by the public recently, and I feel myself that perhaps the sheriff would like to get rid of this department because of that reason, but that is my opinion. And I feel that those complaints really do need to be addressed and considered in light of us having a transfer of Animal Services. It would be a great opportunity to actually get a department for the animals and for the public. And that's all I have to say on that, on this platform. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Ira Alpert, followed by Ruth Bianchi.
Good afternoon. I'm Ira Alpert. I'm president of Woods Humane Society. Supervisors, Sheriff, Leslie, and Dr. Anderson. I'm here this afternoon to indicate that we are certainly an interested party. Our shelter sits on county land next to Animal Services. We have an existing contract, which we certainly try very hard to fulfill and exceed. And any changes in the department will affect our relationship, and we need to work with that. I also want to confirm what we had told Dr. Anderson and Leslie Brown, that we are willing to sit down and talk about any ideas they have where we might be responsible for more of the sheltering or the adoption process that's involved. And I just want to let you know, again, we're here to answer any questions that you might have. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Albert. Also, thank you for coming down today. Ruth Bianchi, followed by Cheryl Tucker.
Hello. My name is Ruth Bianchi. I'm a volunteer at Animal Services. I've been there about 3 years. I believe that it would be of interest to the listening public to know that as things now stand at the animal shelter, if someone from the public makes a lost animal report, that report is taken by the paid staff, put into a binder, and left there. Despite the $1.6 million spent on salaries and benefits to the paid staff, no one from that staff has been directed by management, nor do they actually take the 3 steps from their offices to walk into the shelter and check to see, compare the lost animal reports to the animals that we have in the shelter at the time. This is done by volunteers, if we have time, in addition to all the other responsibilities that we have, which is exercising, caring for, helping to get adopted the animals. This is how it is right now as things stand. And I think this is but one example of the public not getting their money's worth of the taxes that support Animal Services. Instead of the way it exists, one possibility you might consider, and which was listed by Leslie, is changing Animal Services to be a nonprofit organization. This could be an organization that is created, connecting to an existing one, not Woods Humane Society. I'm talking about a brand new nonprofit. This would result in management having the same concerns and willingness to act that our volunteers currently have. In other words, proactive management. I think the benefits of a nonprofit would far exceed the benefits that the shelter currently receives. There would be more creative public relations and marketing, providing much better public information and access. I think more creative programs would exist. There could be a variety of locations of the shelter in various parts of the county, which would also help the public. This is currently being done in many communities in our state, and there are models for doing such a thing. Thank you for listening.
Ms. Pinard, before you stand down, Supervisor Patterson has a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Bianchi, a couple of comments, or one comment, one question. We do have plans to have an animal services facility in North County at the Sheriff's Substation there in Templeton, eventually, or at least a holding area.
Right.
I think that is a good idea. It'd certainly make it more convenient if strays are picked up regionally and then processed regionally. I think that might be in our future. The question I have is, in your comment about moving animal services to a nonprofit or becoming a nonprofit entity, but not Woods, a separate nonprofit, what motivates that comment? Why not Woods?
I think the volunteers have had relations with Woods. I'm not talking about the paid staff. And there are a lot of ways that Woods does things, decisions that they make, that are not the way we do things. They are much more selective. I mean, they're a totally different kind of setup. They're very selective in the animals they choose. When they take animals from the shelter, they will take a bunch of animals, decide which ones they want to keep and which ones they send back. They don't keep the ones that are sick or might have a problem or have a behavior issue, yet those animals could be worked with. We take them back and we work with them and find rescue groups or adoptions or appropriate locations for those animals. We just had a dog, which I mentioned to the sheriff, that has been at the shelter since September. He's a great dog, but he had behavior issues and he wasn't getting adopted. And one of our volunteers spent hours online finding a location for that animal, and it went to a group in Las Vegas that uses shelter dogs in different shows and performances. They have a wonderful facility. They treat their animals kindly. It's different. It's a different perspective that we have.
Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Cheryl Tucker, followed by Karen Stewart.
My name is Cheryl Tucker, and I've been a volunteer at the shelter for a little over a year. And I just want to say that we are not like a throwaway department. I know you guys aren't going to throw the animals away, but I really want you to think about what is best for the whole thing so that we don't have to go through this again. And I appreciate all the effort that you're putting into deciding where we go. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Karen Stewart, followed by Dale McGee.
Hi, I'm Karen Stewart. I've been a volunteer at the shelter for almost 4 years and basically working with the cats. Animal services as a department under the sheriff is not working. It's not efficient. Complaints are not being addressed. And we feel that being under another department would be a much better idea, and it would be a perfect opportunity to change management as far as getting someone in there who will think of the animals first, take care of the animals, make sure that they are healthy. That's not being really done now. We have animals that come in with certain things wrong with them. They're put back in isolation and forgotten. If it wasn't for the wonderful volunteers that come in and make sure that those animals are comfortable and that they're fed, sometimes they are forgotten back there. And we, as volunteers, take those animals sometimes to our own vet at our own expense to have them looked at and evaluated. It would be great if we could get a vet tech in as a shelter coordinator. She or he would be able to evaluate the animal when they come in and get the proper treatment immediately instead of waiting on a long list. That would help everyone. So just think about the department and also think about changing management. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Dale McGee, followed by Diana Duncan.
Good afternoon, Board. Always nice to have a chance to speak with you. I'm Dale McGee, Santa Margarita. I've been a volunteer, intermittent volunteer at Animal Services for about 6 years. Most recently, the past several months, at request of Supervisor Patterson, agreement with Supervisor Gibson, I have been volunteering, facilitating some of the staff and volunteer meetings and offering some consultations with Leslie. I understand there are numerous factors to consider here. This is not an easy choice, lots of layers. I would like to, though, highly recommend the option 3 that is in your staff report, which is the keeping of the enforcement part in the sheriff's department. I think that is a perfect fit. It seems like the right fit. It's such a complicated factor. That is services that seem to be going very, very well. If the sheriff could be, if that could be discussed, if it's not a done deal. And then explore the public-private partnership of giving the kenneling and the sheltering to an outside organization. I think this is an excellent opportunity to look at that. And basically, really, if you step back, looking at historically, Animal Services is not a sheltering organization. It wasn't designed to be that. It has had to just pick that up as it goes. There are organizations out there that do it better or could even do it better. I believe a contract could be written with a group, certainly through the RFP process, that puts into place some of the suggestions that others have brought up that could take the best practices of current shelter volunteer work and things like that, that whatever group receives the contract would then have to implement. I believe that the county should certainly look into that. There is an opportunity here to utilize some best fits and expertise. I think it should be noted, though, this is not a quick fix. There are other issues that need to be fixed. This is the opportunity to look at how to work on those at the same time, because if you just move it someplace, all the infrastructure things are going to keep popping back up. So this is the time to take some time to do this right. I know I just have a few more minutes. And definitely ensure that right resources are there. I know in the sheriff's report it was suggested maybe the budgets wouldn't change. At least resources need to be reallocated at least. So this is the time to really look at it from top to bottom, but I would really like to encourage the public-private partnership, keep the enforcement with the sheriff, and look to current existing resources, but take the best practices that are already occurring, including maximizing the volunteers, which are pretty phenomenal. I'm not, but the other ones are. So, great. Thanks.
Ms. McGee, I'm going to take exception to one thing you said as far as being phenomenal. You're one of the busiest persons I know, and I'm aware of all the programs and things you do for different aspects of the county as well as run a business, and I just want to thank you for taking the time and responding to Supervisor Patterson to help out in this, because we really appreciate your input.
Thank you. But I will truly, there's volunteers that are giving 20 and 30 hours a week. They're amazing. So, but thank you very much.
That. My point was not all of them are working 100 hours a week like you are and still working.
Thank you very much, Supervisor.
Diana Duncan, followed by Jamie Hodian.
Good afternoon. My name is Diana Duncan. I've been a San Luis Obispo County resident since the mid-80s. I have volunteered in this county with animals since 1989. I joined HART, which is the Homeless Animal Rescue Team in Cambria, in 1991. We now have a shelter of our own for the last 7.5 years, which actually is a very nice shelter if anyone wants to visit it. As a taxpayer and a private citizen, I have always been disturbed regarding the fact that this county has hired a veterinarian, which we all needed, which we all wanted back in the days of whenever it was, 5-6 years ago. I don't see this veterinarian doing veterinary stuff at the county shelter. Let's see. This veterinarian is not performing vet duties at all. In fact, over the years and the many, many times I've been to animal services, I've never seen Dr. Anderson in the kennels or the cat rooms, ever. I understand as a veterinarian he is being paid extra to run the Department of Animal Services, but we can hire any old Joe Schmo to do paperwork and run computers. What we need is somebody out there in the kennels and the cat rooms to make sure those animals are healthy, they're being cared for properly, they're going to the vet to be spayed and neutered, and so on and so forth. This is not being done. We need more of a proactive caring manager, someone who actually targets problem areas in the county, such as Paso Robles, who contributes a lot to our overpopulation that goes through that animal shelter every day. We need someone who works with the volunteers and listens to the volunteers. In October, there were many cases of distemper and parvo, and many cats, I don't know about the dogs, but many died, which affects other animal shelters because we receive those in. It affects the foster homes. It's expensive for all of us. It's expensive for the taxpayers. And it's only because those animals are not being vaccinated. We rescue a lot from the pound. Most of our cats are rescued from the San Luis Obispo County pound. I would say probably about 90% of our cats are. And when I look at those records, those animals should be vaccinated as soon as they come off that truck because they are exposed immediately to other animals throughout the county, wherever they're coming in from. And many, many times I'll look over that paperwork and they're not vaccinated at all, or they're not vaccinated till 4 or 5 days later. And by then they've been exposed. And some of these diseases have maybe a 7 to 10 day incubation period before they start to show. And for instance, distemper, which is an airborne disease, can spread throughout the whole shelter. And that was the problem in October when it's very, very warm, and it seems to have happened throughout the years. And I see it over and over and over again. Why aren't these animals
Duncan, vaccinated? Unfortunately, your time is up, but thank you for your comments.
Oh,
sorry.
I didn't even finish.
Jamie Hoden, followed by Elaine Anthony. And I hope I pronounced your name properly. I couldn't read the...
I'll help you out. It's Jamie Hodoyan. Good afternoon, everybody. Animal services is a very delicate topic. I started there as one of the unpaid community members. It would be 6.5 years now. It was a year ago I left. I had been there for 5.5 years and very much involved, well over 20 hours a week, 30 hours a week. A lot of this went home with me. I worked with other rescue groups in the county. When I started animal services back in 2001, it was right before Eric Anderson came on. And when he came on, we saw improvement. We did. We saw improvement. I worked very tightly with Eric. I worked very tightly with office staff, kennel staff, volunteers, the public. I was very hands-on with the animals. Without ever stepping foot in a place like this, we all understand that it'd be very difficult for anyone who has never been in this situation to comprehend really what the concerns are. But we're asking you to trust us on this. All of us recall a time a couple years back when we were all proud, humbly proud, most of us were. I mean, we turned a pound into a shelter. We assisted people with feeling comfortable coming into this environment. We dealt with dying animals. We dealt with severely injured animals. We were there. The animals pay the greatest price, but people pay it too. And what they pay, those animals, they should not have to endure. And Leslie, yes, you're correct. The stats for this community are phenomenal. We are very fortunate. That is due to so many people contributing. What I'm hoping for in the near future, whoever overtakes animal services, basically care, compassion, common sense, strong business management that includes communication and abandoning filth and the disregard that certain attitudes display. And I could go on, but I know my time is up. I hope you gained what I'm trying to say here.
Thank you for your comments. Supervisor Patterson has a question for you before you stand down.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Ms. Hodoyan, you mentioned that things changed a couple of years ago, and I'm just curious if you could briefly describe what changed and maybe give an idea of...
You know, when we achieved the status in the nation, ranking number 4 in county shelters or shelters overall, there was great celebration in that, and a lot of hard work went into that, and we all understood, you know, this was dynamite. But in order to maintain that, more and more efforts would have to be expended and sought. And the communication, and I don't know why, broke down drastically between administration and volunteers. Like I said, I worked very closely, probably more closely with Eric than a lot of the other volunteers. But things changed, and I can't say. There was a breakdown in communication. There was a breakdown in care of the animals. When I left on November 2nd, 2006, I never, ever thought I would leave. And I walked in there, and I no longer could stand looking at the filth and the depression of those animals and feeling... I was working full-time now at that time, and I felt... I can't do anymore.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for your comments. Our last request to speak is Elaine Anthony. Ms. Anthony, is that podium going to work for you, or would you rather have a cordless mic and sit in the front?
I'm fine.
Thank you.
If you can hear me.
We can hear you.
Okay, thank you so much. My name is Elaine Anthony, and I'm here as a citizen, as a taxpayer, and a person who deeply cares for animals. I am not a volunteer at the shelter. Yet I know many who are, and I've been involved in trying to improve conditions there for many, many years. More than 10 years ago, when animal control was under scrutiny, I served as vice chair of the CASAC committee. One recommendation was made at that time that the division name be changed to Animal Services to hopefully more accurately reflect the purpose of the program. In the last few years, things have changed drastically at the shelter. Under the current on-site manager, there's very little oversight of what goes on there. Staff doesn't get adequate job training. The kennels and cattery are not properly sanitized. Many state laws are broken or ignored, and animals are often not given even the simplest of medical treatment. All this is the responsibility of the current manager, who has a DVM title after his name, and he also gets extra pay for this. I've been studying animal services budget requests submitted for each of the last 3 years, and they are riddled with misstatements and outright falsehoods in order to make things look better than they really are. It's also questionable if budgeted monies are used for requested items or for other things. Actual invoices should be checked. This is a copy of the California Animals Laws Handbook. This includes the Civil Code, Penal Code, Food and Ag Code, and others. all pertain to laws that affect our county shelter. Many of these laws are broken on a daily basis, having to do with required minimal animal care, simple medications, and even euthanasia training. These laws are broken and are ignored by current management, including the newly hired shelter coordinator. The use of profanity by the shelter coordinator in front of staff, volunteers, and the public has become common knowledge, with volunteers and staff as eyewitnesses. It really doesn't matter what department Animal Services is placed under. The citizens of our county will be shortchanged, and the animals will continue to suffer from substandard care as long as the incumbent manager and the unqualified, untrained shelter coordinator are in charge. If you had a thorough and competent investigation, it would prove that what I'm saying is fact. The evidence is there. Volunteers and staff, if put under oath, could verify this. This would prove that what I'm telling you is the truth. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comments. That was my, excuse me, we don't clap here. That's not appropriate. I appreciate everyone's comments. If there's no one else willing to step forward, we will close public comment. Ma'am, did you fill out a slip?
I didn't.
Yes. If anyone else would like to fill out a slip that are here, the slips are in the back. And what we can do, if you're the only one, we'll let you get started now and you can fill out your slip later. If there's anyone else that's desires to speak on this matter, please fill out one of the yellow slips in the back of the room and hand them to the clerk or to Leslie over there to pass down. So please state your name for the record, and then we can have you fill out a slip after that.
Okay. My name is Brenda Bowen. I've been a sporadic volunteer at the shelter since 2003. One of my main concerns is with the shelter being under the auspices of the sheriff is the people that come in to clean and take care of the animals are inmates. They don't have proper training. They are rapidly rotated through. I'm mainly interested in rabbits, and I found over the summer that they didn't know how to feed them. They were feeding them the wrong thing. I found dead babies in the kennels that the cleaners didn't find. They would be leaving to go back to the Honor Farm, and the rabbits would still be in filth. I blame some of that on improper management that's there, but I also feel bad for the management because there's not enough managers there to oversee the inmates that are cleaning. I think it's like a snowball effect. The inmates don't know what to do. Some of them don't care about the animals and are rather cruel to them, which I have seen. And the management, there's just a lack of management there because they don't have the adequate numbers to oversee them. And that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. And please be sure to fill out a slip in the back of the room. Is there anyone else wishing to step forward? If not, I'll close public comment. We'll bring it back to the board. Anyone from staff or Leslie or the sheriff want to respond to any of the questions, anything that came up during public comment? Supervisor Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of questions. Sheriff Hedges, one of the proposals before us would actually leave the field operations within the Sheriff's Department and transfer the shelter function somewhere. And my question to you, sir, is if you see the problems that you articulated earlier in your report still being problematic by maintaining just the field operations, it seems to be a good fit there. And do you foresee an opportunity to maybe continue to manage the field service operations? From your perspective, is that an option that we could consider?
Well, I would certainly be open to discussing that as an option. It's something I have not talked with folks from other areas where that is how it's being conducted. So I'd like to see what the pros and cons are of that type of an operation to see if it's something that would be workable here in this county.
You would be willing to at least entertain the conversation?
I'm open to discussion.
Okay. We like that star on the side of the truck. It, you know, carries a little weight along with it. So
understood.
Yeah. And then, if I may, I have a question for Mr. Alpert, if I may, representing the Woods Humane Society, because it has been suggested that that might be one option. as a nonprofit, and we know other counties use nonprofits to manage their animal services. And you had mentioned, Mr. Alpert, being willing to have that conversation, and some issues were raised by people in public comment regarding Woods currently and how they manage their operation and how the two might be integrated. I mean, my question is, do you foresee a problem in maybe integrating the shelter? Because it's a different function.
Well,
and do you feel that that's something you could entertain?
Well, that's why we've had some discussions among ourselves regarding that. And I think what may not be understood is that we are a different kind of organization right now. We are a private nonprofit. We take in animals that are turned in by the public. Under contract, we take animals from animal services. As a private nonprofit, we have more of a liability problem than, although the county may have a liability problem, if we got a couple lawsuits, we'd probably be out of business, even though we have very good insurance. So there are a lot of issues that would have to be talked about, and we know that there'd be some differences in the population of animals. I want to point out, though, that we have a trainer on staff, not full-time, but he's there. We have a veterinarian on staff, and he does veterinary work. It's possible that some animals have been returned to the county at times, depending on who went over to get them, but we have a couple of people now assigned to that, and we think they're doing a good job. There are times of the year when we can't get enough animals from animal services. We've been taking animals to try to help out Santa Maria also. There's a cat overpopulation problem in this county that's best solved by more spay and neutering. We have started spay and neutering county animals under an agreement. We are expanding the number of days we offer that services. We're bringing in additional veterinarians. There are a lot of issues here. There's also historically been room for some misunderstanding because of what our function is and the kind of organization we are now. We talked about taking over, if they wanted, more of the sheltering operations and more of the adoption. We did not talk about taking over the sheriff's part of this, which is, you know, the people going out to pick up animals. We have no experience in that. And certainly, if we were to enter into a contract to take over more of this or all of certain functions, there would be changes in how we would have to operate. And we're prepared to discuss those possibilities. But I can't stand here today and say, you know, we're ready to do it tomorrow. We didn't build to do that. We've built a cooperative arrangement.
Okay. And but you're open to have.
We're opening to have discussions with county staff, with supervisors, whatever group is involved, with the sheriff, to see what we can do to help if they want us to do that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Alpert.
You're welcome.
Mr. Alpert, before you stand up, I might ask a follow-up question, and only because I know your department was criticized in their ability to deal with some animals with difficulties or attitudes or behavioral problems, and I saw you shaking your head in disagreement. Could you just take a minute and either clarify from your perspective what your agency can do or what you can't do, hopefully to help clarify this misrepresentation or misinformation? Yeah.
At the present time, with present staffing, we try to balance our inventory between those. It's mainly dogs that you're dealing with behavior. Cats, it could be an illness problem, but dogs would be a behavior problem. We know that we can adopt out a certain number of pit bulls, Akitas, Chows, and I have one, every month, and that we need other dogs for people to be able to see. The county has a different responsibility. They have to take all the animals that are out there. And we would have to develop a different system if we were responsible for sheltering all the animals. At the same time, when we built our shelter, we assumed that eventually, either through a joint program with the county or another nonprofit, there might be a shelter in the north, and someday there might be a shelter in the south. We have additional capacity. We have areas that are shelled in that can be completed. But the program would have to be different. We've already had some internal discussions about that. We are operating right now as a community nonprofit voluntary organization licensed only to take in animals that are turned in by others or from other county shelters. So to try to compare what we do now with what we would have to do if we took over these responsibilities, it would have to be different. And we're prepared to at least discuss that. I can't tell you what we'd be able to do until we had those discussions and see what came with it.
Thank you again for staying here and for adding on and answering our questions for us. Supervisor Robert?
Yeah, I was just looking at this in terms of trying to get some information for a final decision. And I think that, based again, we're 6 months into the year. We've got a time period before the first, when the new year budget's done, that would be a target that we would probably use. My feeling is that I think that I would like to instruct staff to investigate the capability of the shelter kennel issue being contracted out, that the enforcement be investigated to being staying with the sheriff. And there was one that was not brought up in this, but it was brought to me by a discussion with some people on the phone, that we have a considerable capital investment right now. And if we are going to move forward in relocating the operation of the shelter kennel issue, we should put a hold on those capital expenditures until such time as we have this resolved. And I think that's the best way to go at this particular time. I mean, I've had the fortunate time frame of having gone through Title IX and the multitudes of things that we were accused of doing, and when Karen said she didn't know why we moved it from the health department over, or why we moved it to the health department and into the sheriff, there was a lot of different reasons. Some were individual personalities and equipment. The other was dealing with the rabies control and that, and last was the capability of being able to handle and management issues, and those were the reasons we moved in the back very shortly. So I think that I think the sheriff's done an excellent job with it. I may disagree with the fact about their ability to manage it in the future. It does seem that there might be some internal management issues that may need to come out of this investigation. Again, and this is on information given to me, and I think that's what we need to do at this particular point, and probably that's our instruction, or should be our instruction to staff to go forward with this, to give us the documentation and how we can move forward.
Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wonder if staff could confirm. My understanding from meetings yesterday is that the capital improvements in the shelter are on hold at this point. Is that correct?
Mr. Ritchie, do you want to step forward and give us the latest on the numbers and the budget and the specifics regarding that?
Vince Marici with the County Administrative Office. There is a capital project scheduled for this year. It's about $950,000 worth of remodel and expansion to the existing animal services facility. We've not worked on that at this time. We could put it on hold. It is not on hold at this time. Tentatively scheduled to begin work with preliminary design in the fourth quarter of this year. So we could put that on hold, carry it over as a potential project for next year in the budget. The money's been allocated. It's not a savings because it came out of reserve. So we could keep the funding set aside for that, but not work on the project.
And, Ms. Reese, just be clear, with the fourth quarter of this budget year, which would be what, April, May, and June?
It'd be begun in April, May, and June, so we wouldn't be spending much of the money this year anyway. It would carry over into the next fiscal year.
Thank you for that clarification.
Yeah,
Supervisor Gibson?
Yeah, that seems like a reasonable thing to do while discussions are going underway. Next, I'd like to thank very much Supervisor Patterson and his office, Amy, his legislative assistant, the volunteers, and Leslie and Vince and all others in the Sheriff's Department who've been meeting over a number of weeks now to discuss issues on this. And I particularly appreciate Leslie's data gathering effort there. That's, I think, really helpful in trying to get some perspective on this. I defer to Supervisor Patterson as someone more deeply involved than I, but I too tend to think it seems that there are potentially productive directions of conversation along the lines of the field operations staying with the sheriff and discussions with Woods as regards operating the rest of it. And I'd certainly seems like a reasonable approach to me, and I'd defer to my colleagues as to what they think on that as well.
Supervisor Patterson and Supervisor Asajan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
there are really two tracks underway. One is the committee meetings that we've convened here with staff, and that includes the Sheriff's Department and the Animal Services staff, volunteers, and Mr. Gibson and myself, plus admin staff, to specifically address some of the issues and concerns raised by volunteers. And I want to say that that will continue. We have issues at the shelter as it currently exists. I think we've made good progress in identifying what the issues are, and we've come up with some potential solutions that we're beginning to implement. And I want to thank Ms. McGee for volunteering to facilitate those meetings and all the effort that Leslie Brown has put in to keep things moving along. But those won't go away while we're having this larger discussion on what to do with the shelter in the future. I like the suggestion that we investigate the idea of keeping the field operations in the Sheriff's Department. I would like to see us do that and then continue to explore the other options for the shelter, whether we go out to a private contractor, whether we keep it within the county and move it to a different department, or have a nonprofit take it over. Those are all options available to us. And I think that within the course of the next 3 months or so, we can come to some conclusions on how best to restructure animal services. But I just want to ensure the volunteers that we will continue to address the issues that have been raised. And I want to point something out, because we heard a number of people comment during public comment that the conditions out at the shelter are deplorable, and every day is a different day. I visited the shelter last week, and I walked in unannounced and was given a guided tour by one of the young men from the sheriff's honor farm of the entire facility. And they were busy cleaning the animal kennels. They were all clean. The dogs were out exercising, and there were four young men there working. They all seemed to be very competent and enjoying what they were doing. At least that was my perception, and seeing them over the course of the time that I was there. I went through the cat holding area, and the cats, everything was clean. They were fed, and you know, I was quite impressed. Obviously, we hear different stories from the volunteers, but you know, on that particular morning, it was almost pristine in there. So, I just want to say that it's not all bad, at least not from what I've seen. And yes, there are problems that we need to address, and yes, we are addressing those. So, with that said, I do think that my direction to staff would be to continue down this path of looking for a new home for animal services, but investigate with Sheriff Hedges the possibility of keeping the field operations within the Sheriff's Department, and then look at our options, including costs, of handling the shelter operation differently. I do also want to comment on one thing. I am a supporter of North County Humane Society, and they focus entirely on cats. And over the past couple of years, I know the problems that they have had with growing populations of cats, and I'm sure it applies to dogs as well. And I think where we've dropped the ball is we have not put the emphasis on the spay-neuter programs that we have in the past, and we need to rethink that and hopefully alleviate some of the problems that we're now having to deal with, because we don't invest in the front end like we used to. And I can remember shortly after I came on the board, Dr. Anderson coming to the board and proclaiming that we just had a year where there were no animals, healthy animals, euthanized at the shelter. And that was quite an accomplishment, and I don't know if that's a realistic goal. Maybe we take a look at that, but you know, I'm quite proud of the fact that we've been able to do that, considering it's a pound. It isn't, you know, a leader shelter or any other kind of shelter that just takes the best animals to adopt. We have to take everything, and that's part of the issue and part of the problem. I've had the opportunity to work with Dr. Anderson on other issues, and you know, I feel quite fortunate that we have a veterinarian in that capacity at the shelter. I don't think many other counties have that luxury.
Supervisor Sajjan, Supervisor Obit, and then our CAO, Dr. Edge. Supervisor Sajjan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For one, I want to thank all the volunteers for all the valuable time you have given to the shelter. I assure that without you, we will have a hard time to keep the doors open. So publicly, I want to thank you for all what you have done. I did observe that we had three folks from the planning department here. I don't think they didn't have anything else, so they chose to come here. But I'm wondering if, Mr. Trinidad, if I may put you on the spot, if you have something to offer that we might take into consideration as this conversation follows through with the staff in the near future.
Mr. Trinidad, you need 2 minutes to caucus with your boss over there, because we could always take a couple-minute break.
It's kind of a little unfair, Mr. Chairman, to ask us.
Put him on, I know that. That's why I said if you wanted to have a little meeting with his boss first.
He might just say that he's here, wonder what was going on. But
actually, I heard that you bought a new suit, Koch, and I just wanted to come down and take a look at it.
Okay.
Actually, you know, it's so premature. And
next time you guys tell us you're short on funding, we'll know why.
I really don't have much to add, but be happy to answer any questions you have.
But was there any desire or interest as you folks are here?
We really haven't explored it a lot. There certainly is nexus, as you well know. There are three agencies that handle animals. There's the planning department that does the animal raising and keeping. It's the sheriff's department that does large animals, and animal services that does dogs and cats. So there is a lot of crossover, and it's probably something that administration and Vic need to start looking at things. And
I know the Sheriff's Department does the regulations, but you as a code enforcement, has there been any connection? Has there been any relationship?
We were out having a relationship today with the Sheriff's Department and Animal Services, so we actually work very closely with both agencies.
From your perspective, not that you need more, and I know how busy you are, especially with the new responsibilities you have taken with the during budget time when we approved a little extra money for the junk cars and all that. So very thankful, and I apologize if I came across a little awkward there.
No, that's quite all right.
Our
resources, to even think in that direction, our resources would be spread extraordinarily thin.
Is there room to bring you into the future discussion with administrative staff?
If it's okay with my director, I'd be happy to.
Okay. I just want to know that we did not miss opportunity while you were here. You were hearing all what was going on, if there was any words of wisdom that you had to offer.
Good luck.
Supervisor Sajjan, if I may, I think one of the reasons, at least when I talked to Mr. Hawani yesterday, I was interested here is because if you refer to page 9, his department was listed as one of the options. And so I think anybody that was listed on that sheet is here is to represent them or their
sure
department.
Sure, they don't get stuck with it.
There were a number of department heads.
Supervisor Owens ahead of you.
I would yield because I was going to make a motion.
No.
Second.
If you Dr. Edge, we've got some more people who want to speak here. This thing's lit up.
Well, I've sat here listening to four people speak or three people, and they've all said the same thing. And not that I'm trying to cut this short, but in all deference, Mr. Sajjan, I don't know that I would have called Art up here to ask him if he wanted to take it over because,
it wasn't.
You know, I don't think he really wanted to tell you the truth. I would like to make the motion that and then we can continue discussion if you want, would be to instruct staff to investigate the option of the shelter kennel, contracting that out, investigate the issue of the enforcement with the sheriff and put a hold on the capital expenditure until we make a decision of where we go with this program. And the reason I put that last one on there is, for example, if we were to go with Woods, we might want to use that capital expenditure in a connecting way. I don't know. I can't explain other than that. But as opposed to expansion, that's the only reason on there. On final part of the motion is to bring that back around the third quarter report.
Motion by Supervisor Robitz for a second. Second by Supervisor Asajjan. Under discussion, Dr. Edge.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just briefly, probably getting a sense of where the board's going to go on this, perhaps you might want to make clear for the sake of the sheriff who brought the item to you that it would be your intent. I don't mean to put words in your mouth, as I say, it would be your intent that we would have a different form of animal services in operation in the new fiscal year that begins in July of 2008. That would, sounds like that's what practically you're targeting, that you want us to do the research and come back to you by the third quarter, which would allow you presumably to bless. It's your intent, I think, saying to the sheriff, to bless a different model.
Without just trying to detail this out, I think there's issues in terms of goals and objectives. What is it we want to continue? In other words, we have a service that we supply. How do we meet those? You know, and I think that's the kind of thing to come back. Can we contract out? Do we have another kind of an obligation that keeps that down? Do we want to keep it as one unit? Do we want to separate it out? That's the kind of discussion I think we should have in front of us so that we can look at those options.
Yeah,
and maybe have some on the table that we can make an action.
Pat had indicated a willingness to work with us on a smooth transition. I think he's just probably looking for that there is going to be a transition that he can work smoothly on.
Okay, and just final discussion. I appreciate Supervisor Patterson's comment. I work with the Honor Farm Inmates one day a month between Sheriff's Advisory Council and a couple other meetings. I'm probably out there, I'm going to say, about 4.5 to almost 5 times a month. With respect to the facility, I use the analogy, it's kind of like my garage or my house. Right now, my living room pretty looks like a mess because it's Christmas, but I try to keep it clean. I've been out there when the facility is really clean. I've been out there when it's really dirty. So I think we need to be very careful to make broad statements to say, well, this is a housekeeping issue. I think it's like anything else. If something's not getting done, we need to address that and make sure that it is getting done because, like I say, I've been out there unannounced and got a puppy or a dog from my friend here a while back, and the place was clean, and I was out there going dirty. So I think we need to be very careful when we make statements like that. Supervisor Patterson?
Yes, I just want to conclude by saying that I'm going to support the motion with the clarification that we're not just talking about a smooth transition. We're talking about investigating what it would take to provide the field services and continue the field services within the Sheriff's Department. And my understanding that the sheriff was going to investigate what that might be and report back to us when in the third quarter. And we'll actually have some specific options before us. And with that, I would think we would have cost analysis as well. So we'd be in a position in the third quarter to make a decision one way or the other.
We need the whole picture.
And for those, since the screen was on you, or those that are listening, I see the sheriff affirmatively nodding his head that he's going to work with us to do that. So with that, Madam Clerk, a roll call, please.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Asajjan?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye. Thank you very much. We appreciate you taking your time to come down here on a rainy day. This is our last meeting of this year, so happy holidays, happy new year, and we'll see you January 8th.
Happy new year. You nailed it.
Hey, Art.
And it was.